pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Twice
is nice. Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff Rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your
daddy?
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Well, not in the mood or just don't want to do it and want to still don't want to call 313-298-WRIF. You can always email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Now, I'm sort of, I was going to say this and a lot, I can see a lot of heads nodding. I'm sort of an odd kind of guy when it comes to major breaking stories. A friend of mine called me real early in the morning and said they just captured Saddam Hussein. My wife said, we're in bed still. She said, are you going to get up and turn on the television? And I said, no. And you can turn on the radio? No. Not going to do it. So maybe around 2 o'clock, I wanted to kind of let as much of the debris settle as possible. I looked online. But one of the things I always do is studiously avoid watching television at these kind of crucial junctures like this, because we've talked a lot before about television, how it has the capacity to overwhelm you with its very form. Not just with the information that's there, but with the form of it itself. And particularly at the beginning of high-profile incidents, it's so filled with mis and disinformation that I can't think straight. I mean, it's too fast a medium for critical thinking. And these are issues that have to do with, by the way, you know, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the capture of Saddam Hussein. Not a lookalike, apparently. Looks like he might have spent about the last 6 months on the streets of Detroit or New York or something like that. But, let me tell you why I'm kind of stumbling around. The same friend said, well, you're going to have a lot to talk about tonight. And I said, gee, am I? I don't know. I don't know what I have to say about this yet. Real interested in what you have to say. 313-298-WRIF or calltalkyes at yahoo.com. And some of this, there's this hyperventilation that always comes along with the incidents of importance to powerful people. Now, why was the capture of Saddam Hussein important to begin with? I mean, this is capture the flag or checkmate or what have you. Gotcha. And Saddam Hussein, I mean, since he was living in a hole, didn't look like he was too much running the show in terms of the resistance of at least some sector of the Iraqi people to the United States invasion and occupation. In fact, almost immediately after the capture of Saddam Hussein, probably even before people knew about it, there was these thunderous blasts in Baghdad. So one really doesn't know what this is going to signal. Whether this is going to, in fact, take the wind out of the sails of the people that are resisting the American occupation. You know, our troops that have come 6,000 miles away for what is it now? What's the story today to capture this tyrant? A tyrant he is indeed and was. All the while that the United States, under Bush's father and Reagan, were giving him all sorts of money and intelligence and letting American and German corporations arm him with weapons of mass destruction. People like Donald Rumsfeld shaking his hands after some of his mass murderous deeds. So if Saddam Hussein goes on trial, maybe he's going to be like Slobodan Milosevic of Yugoslavia, who started talking about the complicity of the West in some of these crimes he's accused of. Although, there's a direct connection here. Without the American administrations prior to 1991, and going back, since it's bipartisan, going back into the Carter regime, there's high complicity on the part of the American government in Saddam Hussein. Now, remember, let me see if I can find any of this. Well, let's go to the BS first. Let's go to the BS. Saddam's capture gives Bush huge boost. Huh. Just when it looked like he was going to slide, but then remember the turkey dinner where he had this prop turkey. Everyone else had sliced pre-prepared turkey, but he had this one as a prop. Kind of gave him an uptick. But now it says that it lifted a huge political weight from President Bush after months of rising casualties and growing doubts about his handling of Iraq. I'm not quite sure why this ends that. I mean, this doesn't alter the fact that this war was not about capturing Saddam Hussein. The war, remember, was about weapons of mass destruction, and we've all forgotten that. It seems kind of rude, almost, doesn't it, to keep bringing that up. When's he going to stop talking about that? Is he going to talk about how Bush stole the 2000 election next? Well, I might. Because it's all connected. You know, the guy that comes in second in the presidential race now has got us in one mess after another. And I don't think we're out of the mess in Iraq. I mean, you would think that given the might of the United States, given the fact that they're taking our tax dollars and turning it over to Bush's buddies to reconstruct the mess that his other buddies made, you know, in the war, and that they're buying people off wholesale. You know, we work, and then they bring over tens of millions of dollars of cash. You know, a huge number of Iraqi soldiers have just quit. don't know if I have that here or not. But large numbers of them quit, and they said, okay, all right, you know, we'll give you more money. I think this is in here. This is pretty interesting. All right. Yeah, Iraqi army desertions may force pay raises. Faced with the desertion, I didn't want to say this figure, it sounded incredible, but faced with the desertion of nearly half the new Iraqi army, the U.S. military may raise its pay as it trains more Iraqis to join the force. Now, I wish U.S. soldiers would get this. You know, the pay rates and what have you have been cut. And our money's going over there to pay this new army. Well, let me see. Let me get back to a couple of things here. Here is this Terrence Hunt writing from Washington. And he says, around the world, it sent a thundering message of America's resolve to prevail in the war against terrorism. Well, first, as soon as someone writes like that, I know that they're just a propagandist. That they sound like a Republican speechmaker or something like that. Or a politician of either party. Around the world, it sent a thundering message of America's resolve to prevail. Now, why did it send a thundering message? Why did it even send any message? Here, this guy who looks like a crack addict is hiding in this hole, on the run, trusting no one, probably having no role whatsoever in the killings of American soldiers that goes on daily. But then here, resolve to prevail in the war against terrorism. Now, here, a lot of you who don't think about this issue greatly are going to really either, think I don't know what I'm talking about, or sometimes I get these emails at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, that, angry response when I say, what does capturing Saddam Hussein have to do against the war, have to do with the war against terrorism? What does the capture of Saddam Hussein have to do with the war against terrorism? Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with September 11th. Oh, wait a minute. What did that guy just say on the radio? I'm just coming home from work. I'm just coming home from the bar. I'm just coming home from here or there or going here or there. And I heard a guy on WRIF, Peter Werby, say Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with September 11th. Well, where could he get an idea that stupid from? I guess it was George W. Bush that said that. And recently, in fact, I think it was today, wasn't it, that there was, you got to follow this stuff closely. In fact, all this is about life and death. So I think you have an obligation to follow this closely, or don't come up with strong opinions. Because you're just going to find yourself manipulated. Because what people speak for in positions of power is to create an effect, not to tell you the truth, but to create an effect. And if a few years down the line, all this turns out to be a lie, and here's what's going to happen. The people that are, say, listening, who are in their teens right now, probably have the best shot at this. Because eventually, it'll come out, maybe in 30 years, someone's 15 years old, and you're listening. So when you're 45 years old, it'll come out that Bush and them knew all along that there were no weapons of mass destruction. This will come out in presidential papers or in memoirs or something like that. Hopefully it'll be before November 2004, but that's not, that's not going to happen. Don't bet on that. So Saddam Hussein, people in Baghdad are cheering. People in Detroit are cheering. Well, he's a pretty awful guy. And like I said, It's a little hard to understand then why people like George Bush's father and Ronald Reagan and even Jimmy Carter were providing Saddam Hussein with the wherewithal to do his nasty deeds. And this is what got him started. I mean, without the American government, without George Bush Sr., without Ronald Reagan and Carter, the big role was in the 80s with Reagan and Bush's father. There wouldn't be any mass graves at all. There wouldn't be any torture chambers. If they would have said, look, you're a hideous man, and you're a dictator, and we're cutting you off. We're cutting you off at the knees. We wouldn't even be having this discussion. So if Saddam Hussein goes on trial, he may try to implicate as accomplices George Bush Sr. for allowing him to slaughter Shiites in the South in 1991 and the Kurds in the North. The decisions of people like George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney at the time are responsible for those deaths, as well as Saddam Hussein. because they had geopolitical reasons. They thought about the position of a U.S. interest, read oil, because ultimately this is what it's all about. It's a lot about a lot of other things. But how could this be this important? Look at this. Wall Street to rally because of this. Some tin pot murderous dictator gets captured by the biggest army in the world, 6,000 miles from home, and that Wall Street is going to rally. May give dollar a boost, even. I got to say, I don't get this at all. Is there any more in here? And again, when you start reading, not news, not reporting, but essentially propaganda. Around the world, it sent a thundering message of America's resolve to prevail in the war against terrorism. And Bush says Saddam to face justice. What about international law? They asked George Bush a couple days ago. They asked him a question about U.S. policy in Iraq violating international law. International law? I better call my lawyer. He didn't bring that up to me. So, here, you know, this is like a mafioso don. Or don, whatever you want to call it. You know, the law, we don't think much of that. Here's what Benjamin Ferenz says. He was a prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials for Nazi war crimes after World War II. He said it's a sad commentary when the President of the United States has apparently no knowledge or concern for international law. We said at Nuremberg that we would be bound by laws, that they would be, apply equally to all. But it's a violation of international law to go to war without the approval of the United Nations Security Council when you're not under armed attack. Somebody wrote me and they said, well, how would you propose taking out Saddam Hussein? Well, I wouldn't propose them in a way that hundreds and hundreds of American soldiers are dead and a couple thousand with hideous wounds and thousands of dead Iraqi civilians. You know, there was a proposal right before the U.S. invasion that Saddam Hussein floated to cut a deal with the United States, that he would let in U.S. Marine inspectors. He was on the way out. But they had to hurry up, and Bush did, and them to get this invasion going. According to Benjamin Ferenz, the prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials in 1945, he said the U.S. has violated that in its attack on Iraq as well as other times. The Bush administration has repudiated the International Criminal Court when over 90 nations want to carry on the legacy of the Nuremberg tribunals. This kind of stuff on and on. So, I don't know. I mean, anything that will stop the bloodshed there is good. And if this dries up the resistance, good. I don't think it will. I mean, eventually the United States should be able to prevail and impress its will upon the Iraqi people to make it essentially an imperial outpost that represents our interests, that violates Iraqi laws, which says that that foreign companies can't own Iraqi businesses. Well, that's all going to go down the tubes. The idea. You know, remember that a few days ago before all this got started? Let me see if this is in here. Oh, yeah. This is from Jim's listening in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He said, here's Republican logic. Remember Bush said, if you weren't with the coalition of the willing, that's the coalition of the willing, those nations willing to violate international law. And to get on board with George Bush, an illegal president, to carry out an illegal and unnecessary war. Because even if they are able to suppress at the cost, and I'll bet you, of hundreds of more American lives and hundreds of more of Iraqi lives, they're breaking the bank at home. They're taking these billions of dollars out of our pocket and spending it to fix the mess that Bush's buddies made. I mean, we owe it to them to some extent. But most of it, of course, is for military expenditures. But all those military expenditures goes to, like, his dad's company, the Carlyle Group. And he just sent over James Baker. James Baker, what company is he connected with? Oh, the Carlyle Group as well, that made a fortune off the destruction of Iraq. And let me tell you this. If you're just sitting here getting angry at me and you're thinking, what the hell is this guy talking about? And who's the Carlyle Group? And who's James Baker? You don't know enough to make a decision. There's a lot of players in this, and they're looking for suckers, and they're looking for people that'll treat world politics like a big football game, So we captured the flag. We got the ace of spades, or whatever his designation was. Ain't that great? When are they going to catch Osama bin Laden? People routinely now are saying October 2004, because they're going to have a little October surprise. Anyways, Jim listening in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he wrote to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, those kids who risk their lives, the corporations of their country deserve to make the profit. Perfect Republican logic. Alternative, we wrecked it, so we get to rebuild it. I'm behind you all the way, George. I'm thrilled by being made complicit in this scheme. Where's my cut? Sincerely, taxpayer. Well, I'd like to hear from you. Let's see, here's another email that just came in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Well, Peter, I guess we know that we'll be seeing on the commercial for Bush's reelection campaign the American flag in the background, Bush serving turkey to the troops, and now the capture of Saddam. Hopefully the sheeple of the U.S. don't buy this. Four more years of Bush, that's what Chris says. Longtime listener, concerned human. All right, let's get on the air. I mean, I don't know, you know. I couldn't care less what happens to Saddam Hussein, although what this begins to do is to give affirmation to this absolutely unnecessary war that destroyed this country and has killed thousands of people, including hundreds of our people. You know, one thing, by the way, I just want to say one other thing about emails. One of the things that that comes forth in these emails, and people object to what I'm saying, is this real fear. Because Bush and them have manipulated this fear, this terror that came as a result of September 11th. And one writer said, Peter Werbe, he says, can you promise me that my children are going to be safe? So here is this fear, this deep parental fear, and we have to put it in the hands of Big Father. Because only Big Father has the big guns. Well, I would suggest that all of this is not making us safer at all. That it probably is setting up us up for more stuff, more people hating us. And I mean, obviously, we've allowed Americans to become targets successfully up in the hundreds because of the unnecessary invasion of Iraq. And what would have happened, you might say, well, what if we didn't? Well, we know Saddam Hussein was not involved in terrorism. And you better, if you call up here, 313-298-WRIF, don't just say everyone knows, because Bush himself said that there was no connection. And I don't think I finished the thought earlier. The person from Al-Qaeda that was supposed to have met, or the person from Iraq that was supposed to have met with the Al-Qaeda agent has just said publicly he never met with anyone, and no one takes that serious. It was another lie of Dick Cheney. Cheney, what was this deal? He was out, he says, hunting pheasants. He killed like 70 pheasants. That's not hunting. That's animal killing. That's slaughter. These are the kind of people that we're dealing with and have turned politics into this spectacle where they can pull our chains, jerk us around, present people as the ultimate enemy. It's Fu Manchu. It's, what was it in 1984? Goldstein. I mean, go back and read about the 3 Minutes Hate in 1984, if you haven't read that book since high school or college. Well, here I said I didn't have anything to say. I probably have more, but let me let you have a few words in here. I'm Peter Werbe. This is the Night Call Show, 313-298-WRIF, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I've got a brand new, oh, man, this is really a drag, too. I could put up a brand new website at peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E, and I totally screwed it up. It's, you know, it really looks sharp. And so, Bill, if you're listening out there in the West Coast, my webmaster, I screwed up your beautiful design, and people can't even read the center column now. So, Bill, if you're listening, all you got to do is go to that little black box item and hit the return once, and we'll be all set. Bill, please, I hope you're listening. All right, where are we going? Line 2, thank you very much. Rick Fox is our phone screener and producer for tonight. You'll talk to him first. Hi, this is WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, hi, Peter.
Hi.
It's Mark. I appreciated everything you were saying about Saddam Hussein and how George Bush is going to play this now. I think what he's going to do you were right about the commercials. You're going to see this in the commercials, and it probably won't stop or slow down even the resistance that our troops are facing over there. What it may do, though, is it may give some of the Iraqi people more courage to come forward and help our troops. So in the end, I think it still ends up being a very long, drawn-out affair, and we ought to continue just as you're doing, and I appreciate it. We ought to continue why we're in it in the first place, and we ought to start thinking about what the best way is to get out of Iraq.
Yeah, you know, Mark, even if there had been no resistance whatsoever, which would have left a lot more people alive, our troops and their people, it still is this financial catastrophe for everyone except for the big war contractors, Bush's buddies. So had there not been, you know, if everybody, remember Rumsfeld and them said we were going to be welcomed as liberators, which never happened. Now he's saying, I never said that. Of course he said that. And they have, these guys rewrite history as they go along. I was talking about 1984 by George Orwell. Remember that Winston Smith, the protagonist, he worked in the, department, but he had the memory hole where everything that was once true yesterday now became, disappeared. And so, so it is. Weapons of mass destruction. When is the last time you heard anybody in the Bush administration say those three words?
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Right.
Thanks. Thank you, Mark.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Here's what Aaron writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The capture of Hussein will now, no doubt give Bush a short-lived boost in the polls, followed by yet another round of, we didn't say that, representations from his administration when people ask why so-called resistance hasn't dissipated. But on the whole, as you note, this is a symbolic event made relevant mostly by the Bush administration's emphasis on the importance of capturing Hussein. Yes, that's circular. It is an important victory because Bush has expressed for months that the capture would be a, quote, major victory. Well, remember the last declaration of major victory when he was aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln. Another stunt. I mean, this is what drives the Bush administration's political stunts, and it's for the rubes. It's for the people that can watch television, and because it's presented on the official medium of this culture, people get taken in by it. Because to do so would mean, for one thing, to turn off the damn television. There's not much there. I mean, people told me, man, I saw him pulled out of that hole or something going through his head for lice about 35 times. Where are we going, Mr. Fox? Thank you very much. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
All right. Long-time listener, first-time caller. This is Mo from Dearborn.
Hi, Mo.
Good. Hey, listen, I mean, I could actually entertain the idea that we went over there for weapons of mass destruction, and guess what? We didn't find any. I can even entertain the idea that we went over there to get Saddam and to bring him to justice. Okay, now that you guys found a 60-year-old or 70-year-old Iraqi man who's in dire need of a haircut and a shave inside of a cage in Tikrit somewhere, now can we just pack it up and leave and bring some of our soldiers home? I mean, because the only thing, what else is there now? Does Bush want to kill? Because the only way that Bush could actually save face in front of, like, all the people and saying, okay, I wasn't here for oil, which he's been saying, it's not for oil, this is not about money, this is not about, his dad's company, Halliburton, or anything like that. It's not about that. He just, all right, we got what we wanted, we got Hussein, now it's time for us to go back. I mean, that's just the way I see it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Mo.
All right.
Thanks for having joined me at 313-298-WRIF. Phil, who signs himself loyal listener from the city of Wayne, Michigan. The capture of Saddam is completely irrelevant. We supposedly went in Iraq because Saddam's regime posed an imminent, that means immediate, threat to the security of the USA by possessing weapons of mass destruction. Now, that's been twisted to freeing the Iraqi people. The ignorant masses will buy the BS and possibly re-elect Bush. I'm disgusted, says Phil. That came to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Phone calls at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Werby.
Hi.
I just want to say that first-time caller, long-time listener, and, I myself support what you're trying to put out there to the public. And kind of what the first caller said about, it's a political aspect. Yes, we have this gentleman reelect me.
Yeah.
That and the young lady who was a POW. How do you get a book out that quick?
Jessica Lynch?
Yes.
Well,
I mean, she has the book out so quickly. I mean, I understand the time frame it takes to write a book and print a book and the whole nine yards. I mean, there's a political backing to that. That's the only way you can get it pushed through that quickly.
Well, there is. I mean, what they call now, they do talk about instant books. And here's what they did. I mean, I don't know if this was the case, but since it's all just kind of storytelling, you know, it's not like someone has to do research on it or anything, is that you know, now they don't even call them ghostwriters. It used to be someone who would write it for the person. But they always say Jessica Lynch with. I mean, I haven't seen the book, but I'm sure doesn't it just have her name on it. And so the guy or the gal that's the with, she will interview Jessica Lynch and tell us what happened and go on and on and on. And then we'll write it up. I'm telling you, I think they could probably put out a 300-page book in a week and a half.
Oh, it's doable, yes, I agree. And, I mean, Bush can also take that going, yes, you know, do you see what they put this young lady through? One of our daughters, our brothers, our sisters, you know, vote for me and, you know, we'll take care of this.
Well, Jessica Lynch didn't quite turn out to be the asset that was another spectacle, of course. Didn't quite turn out to be the spectacle and pro-war hero that the Bush gang thought. I mean, she was, she denied a lot of what they were trying to put on her. And then, of course, there was Shoshona Johnson? Was that her comrade in arms, the woman? She just cashed it in. She said, I want out of this army. I wonder if people are going into the army now. I bet you they're not going into the National Guard. Yeah.
I have a relation, and he hasn't seen his family in like a year and a half now.
Yikes. That's not good.
And, well, when you're up doing what they got to do, the family's put on number two.
That's right. All right, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. And this person just signs their first initial A from West Bloomfield. Dear Peter Werby, Godspeed in giving the reactionary warmongers hell. Remember Harry Truman, who, they always just say, give them hell. He says, I don't give them hell, I just tell the truth and they think it's hell. He says, don't know who this is, great to hear an alternative to the corporate governmental propaganda patriotism we're inundated with every day in this time of Orwellian war is peace. That was one of the slogans of Big Brother in 1984. Mr. Fox, we will go to line number 6. Thank you so much. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. It's Funky. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I think you're kind of, you know, full of bunk as usual. You do anything to criticize any conservative movement. I think if you look at any video or drive through Dearborn within the last 24 hours, you'll see what the capture of Saddam Hussein has affected on people that actually have a direct connection that are first generation.
Were you out there on Dix Highway?
No, but
you watched it on television. You know, I didn't completely tell the truth. I actually looked at about 2 minutes of television and saw that on Channel 2 and on Channel 4. Both the news crews from those stations were out on, I don't know if it was Dix, but one of the main drags, or Warren, or one of those streets. And there was a celebration. It looked to me like there was about 25 or 30 people. Now, look, Saddam Hussein has done horrible things to people. And that's very important. There's a couple of things that need to be done. You know, there in South Africa, where the government there did horrible things to people as well for 50 or 75 years, they had truth and reconciliation councils. And the point that I'm getting at is all of us know how horrible and the horrible deeds that Saddam Hussein did. What I'm talking about in here is let's also understand the complicity of the men in the United States government, the Rumsfelds, the Cheneys, the George Bush Seniors, the Ronald Reagans, the James Bakers. that we're complicit, because just like the United States government for the last 100 years, when it set out upon an imperial course that Mark Twain spoke so eloquently about in the late 19th century, that the United States has supported the worst, most god-awful torture states, repressive regimes, dictators, tyrants, and when people tried to overthrow them, as you probably know, the United States has invaded over 100 countries in that 100-year period. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not trying to say that Saddam Hussein shouldn't, string him up by his... Well, actually, I don't think they should do that. But, I mean, who could care what happens to Saddam Hussein unless he's being used as a propaganda ploy in some phony, tribunal?
Yeah, but Peter, my point is everything that you've said since you've aired at the beginning of your show has been bunk, whether it's been regard to the 70 pheasants during the hunt. I mean, if you tell the second half of the story, what happened to those animals, I mean, my hunting party took 20 deer. They went to a food bank in Pontiac, as did these pheasants.
Well, you know, there's something a little weird about somebody that wants to kill 70 pheasants, I mean, in a controlled situation. They do that like on Pelee Island. They raise these pheasants, and then they get these bozos that couldn't, hunt. I mean, you ever listen to Fred Bear by Ted Nugent?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what is he talking about? He's talking about the traditional hunting, paths of tracking deer, of having to go, down into the hollow. And I mean, these are guys that they all of a sudden, all right, let them out of the cages, bam, 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 like that. That's not hunting. That's called animal slaughter. That's animal slaughter.
You know about hunting. Is that accurate, Peter?
Do I know that that's these controlled hunts where they let people, where they let birds out of cages so that rich creeps like Cheney, who should be on any trial, should be right up there with Saddam Hussein? Do I know that? Yeah.
All right. Well, we agree to disagree as usual.
All right. Funky. Get funky. Thank you. 313-298-WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Ask yourself this question. Are you happy with the size of your breasts? Now ask yourself, do big breasts really make a difference? If you answered no to the first question and yes to the second, then listen up, because there is good news. With the help of Dr. Roche, you can have the appearance that you've always dreamed of. With over 20 years board-certified experience in cosmetic procedures, Dr. Roche has seen hundreds of patients choose a breast enhancement procedure to meet a variety of needs. With numerous options, such as breast augmentation, lift, and reduction, Dr. Roche will discuss the procedure that's right for you. Life is short. Why go through another day unhappy with your appearance? A breast enhancement procedure will give you a whole new positive attitude and outlook on life. Visit DrRoche.com today. That's DrRoche.com or AOL keyword Dr. Roche, and privately view before and after pictures. Then call Dr. Roche in Bloomfield Hills at 877-338-1110 to schedule a consultation.
Put your best face and body.
December 2003, David Hall reporting for Rock Financial. With Rock Financial Smart Choice Interest Only Loan, you can get a $150,000 loan for as little as $500 a month. Learn how right now. Call the mortgage experts today at 800-333-ROCK or visit us online at rockfinancial.com. With Rock Financial's exclusive new Smart Choice Interest Only Loan, you can cut your monthly payment down big time or keep your payment the same and pay your loan off faster. Pay principal when you want to. It's your choice. Call the experts, 800-333-ROCK. Used to be that to qualify for an interest-only loan, you needed $1 million in assets. Well, not anymore, because Rock Financial is bringing Wall Street to Main Street. Call the experts today, 800-333-ROCK, or visit us online at rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender. Rate can change. The interest rate is 4%, APR 3.7% after 3 years. Payment can adjust to $532 and can adjust every 6 months after that. Call the mortgage experts now, 800-333-ROCK.
If you're looking for a unique gift of jewelry, now there's a new store with five times the selection of ordinary jewelry stores.
That's Jared.
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, has opened another new store in the Detroit area across from the Oakland Mall in Troy. Discover the area's best collection of independently certified diamonds, Sea Magic Culture Pearls by Mikimoto, gold, platinum, exotic color gemstones, the brilliant Leo Diamond, and fine Swiss timepieces. Plus, Jared has everyday low prices. To see the very latest gold jewelry designs from around the world, shop Jared today. Jared has hundreds of bracelets, earrings, chains, and rings expertly crafted in 14 and 18 karat yellow, white, or two-tone gold. Visit us at Jared.com to design your own ring or to find the nearest Jared location. Jared on Baldwin Road in Auburn Hills, across from 12 Oaks in Novi, in Utica at M59 and the Van Dyke Expressway, and our newest store in Troy across from Oakland Mall.
Enter the PlayStation's Million Reasons to Play PS2 Combo Pack $1 million giveaway and you could win $1 million. And with $1 million in your pocket, you can quit your job. Or better yet, find a really creative way to get fired.
Mr. Taylor, it's Brian, your assistant. Yeah, hey, wanted to let you know that I just won $1 million. Yep, you heard me. $1 million. So if you call me, I won't answer. I'll be busy, you know, busy trying to erase the image of you jamming a ham sandwich in your fat face at our last meeting. Oh, and besides, that sound of your whiny voice really makes me want to set myself on fire. So, that's it. Did I mention I just won $1 million? And I'm dating your daughter. Gotta go.
Someone's actually going to win $1 million from PlayStation. Wouldn't it be fun if it were you? To enter, pick up your PlayStation 2 Combo Pack and go to PlayStation.com and click on the Million Reasons to Play PS2 Combo Pack $1 million giveaway link. No purchase necessary. See complete rules at PlayStation.com or at participating retailers. Promotion ends 1-16-04. Open to U.S. residents 18 or over.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road in Canton. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit
at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Do you feel like half the man you used to be? Do you feel tired and irritable? Are you losing your sex drive? If so, you could have low testosterone.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. Testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now you can boost your testosterone naturally. Introducing Testostazine, the powerful new testosterone-boosting system I developed for men who are starting to feel their age. Testostazine supports your body's ability to produce testosterone the way you did when you were younger, so you can restore your energy, youthful sex drive, and staying power. Testosterone keeps a man energetic and sexually confident. You can feel that way no matter what your age. Testostazine can help.
Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of testosterone. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Guaranteed to work for you or your money back. Call 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're talking about the capture of Saddam Hussein, and I'm saying doesn't alter the fact that this war was illegal and unnecessary, and like everything else generated by the chase of profits for Bush's corporate pals and his already rich friends. Now, Funky called in and said that, didn't I see the people celebrating? And I said, I saw that on television. They did a long shot. Remember that phony pull down of the Saddam statue in Baghdad Square? This was this Chalabi character that hadn't been in Iraq for like 40 years, and he was sent in with this special patrol. Now, You know, this guy was a horrible, brutal dictator, and people hate him. And I've talked to Iraqis here in Detroit that have told these grisly stories about the tortures they've seen. I was talking to a man who began when relating his story of crying. So I'm sure that the idea that finally this, you know, I'm going to use this kind of phrase, all the kids, you know, this son of a bitch, Saddam, has finally gotten captured, and probably the joy at seeing him trapped like a rat in a hole probably is gratifying to people that have suffered from him. Why I use the SOB phrase, I guess you can almost say anything now, but I'm kind of old school, was that someone told Franklin Delano Roosevelt about what a bad, oh, it's going right out of my mind, either the Somozas, yeah, remember, the United States, as I said earlier, has backed these torture regimes and coups of legitimate democratically elected governments for over the last 100 years, and that's why the United States backed Saddam Hussein. Anyway, let's say it was Somoza of Nicaragua, it might have been any one of another, you know, any one of other 10 terrible dictators that the United States supported in Latin America. And someone said to Franklin Roosevelt, he said, the Somoza's a son of a bitch. And he said, yeah, but he's our son of a bitch. And meaning that he supported U.S. corporate interests in that part of the region, which is all, you know, what it's all about. So Saddam Hussein was, quote, our son of a bitch. You know, bought and paid for by U.S. tax dollars, particularly in the 80s. Now, in terms of celebrating, here's what Digger writes in. He's in Dearborn, and he says, I'm in Dearborn. The only happy Arabs today are the Iraqi Christians. The Muslims, Iraqi Shia, are excluded and are not out celebrating. Ask around. I don't know. I thought one of the guys I saw on television looked, I don't know how Iraqi Christians dress, but he had a traditional, headdress on. So I'm not sure. But I wanted to get, there's a lot of people. Why do people write like this? People, Peter, you're a joke. Oh, man. God, that hurts me. That hurts me so bad. Maybe I won't even have my opinions. This is Mike in Canton writing into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You're taking one of the most important days in Iraqi and American history and turning it into a negative. Hey, Mike, turn off your damn television. You know, if you don't watch television, if you don't have Big Brother telling you what's important, what's an important day in Iraqi and American history, you wouldn't even think it is such. It's Big Brother speaks, you know, this, and what they want from us is like in 1984, duck speak. You quack from your throat. You quack allegiance to Big Brother. That's what the model citizen does of the empire. And he says, you see all the Iraqi people in their country's streets and the streets of Dearborn. Well, you know, what would you say about when Hitler marched into Austria and there was these crowds along the streets? Would you say the Austrian people supported Hitler? Or would it be the people that are there? You go tell them this capture meant nothing. Well, I don't know that it meant nothing at all. I didn't say it meant nothing. We backed Saddam in his early years only because, and see, here's what I'm talking about. Here is someone who makes these statements and then is so clueless about reality. We backed Saddam in his early years only because the Shah of Iran would have killed us all, yes, even you, if they had had the chance. Now, what can I tell you? The Shah of Iran, of course, was a strong U.S. ally that was installed after the United States overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran in 1954. And they grabbed this brutal tyrant who ran a torture state, who had mass graves, who had an awful secret police called the Savak. That's who the Shah of Iran was. The Shah of Iran then was overthrown by the radical Muslim Shiites under Ayatollah Khomeini. Now, maybe you say, oh, well, that's what I meant. You know, don't bust my balls for that. And, well, these guys wouldn't have killed us all. Muhammad Atta is now having found to be trained, to have trained in Iraq and met with Saddam. Check on it. I'll tell you what. You check on it. You check on it, Mike, and send me the site of this, because no one else believes this. The guy you probably think is so great, George W. Bush, has said that Saddam Hussein has nothing to do with September 11th. Frank writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Reagan, Bush are at the root of this mayhem. Welcome to the new world disorder. All right, let's go to our phones. I could read these all night. I appreciate them. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, what's up? It's Mike from Mount Clemens. How you doing?
Hi, Mike.
I'm kind of glad that I get the opportunity to go after Funky, because I know you don't get a lot of guys with a right-wing political point of view that call on your show.
Right.
I have one question for you, but I have a couple comments that I want to make beforehand. I don't know too many people that are politically active that I know, but, you know, every now and then you hear this thing with Cheney where he says that, I know for sure that Saddam Hussein had a link with Al-Qaeda, and I don't know too many people that believe that, but I think there is a pretty clear link between Saddam and terrorism, at least with Hamas and his money that he would give to suicide bombers.
Well, so did Saudi Arabia. I mean, our allies there. And actually, Saddam Hussein...
I don't know so much that those are our allies.
Well, no.
I think we're kind of playing it off like they might be, but there's probably a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about.
I'm sure there are, but in terms of what we do know about, we know that Saudi Arabia and Iraq, at least, I don't know if other countries did, would give money to the families of martyrs. The other people that Saddam Hussein gave money to were the thousands of Palestinians that were killed by the Israeli Defense Forces, the civilians, the innocent people that just happened to get in the way.
I am aware of that. And you know what? That sucks that those civilians had to go out.
Yeah, terrible.
In Israel's plight to wipe those guys out. But
You got to break a few eggs if you're going to make an omelet, right?
Isn't that war? I mean,
I think that's what Stalin said, but whatever.
Anyways, my next point, I think for me anyway, when I look at the Bush Doctrine of Preemption, and I've heard you talk about this before, back when Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearl and all those guys were trying to talk George Bush Sr. into going in, and wasn't it called the Project for a New America or something?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
New American Century.
New American Century, correct.
Right.
You talk about weapons of mass destruction, but I even remember hearing you on your show one time. You gave yourself an out when you said that, you know, you weren't really sure if they had them or not. You couldn't be 100% convinced, neither can I, and I don't think anybody can. There's a lot of evidence that says that, you know, he might have had these programs, or, I mean, there's no denying the fact that he had them at a point before. A lot of people say that we gave them to him. I think the biggest link for me when I think of Saddam and terrorism, or as far as the doctrine of preemption goes, is why take the chance for this guy? I mean, he's lied about stuff in the past. We went through a lot of inspections with the arms inspectors that were in his country for how long, 12 years?
There was no chance whatsoever. I mean, nobody even suspected that Saddam Hussein represented even the slightest threat to any other country, no one in the region, to supporting an unjustifiable war. I mean, the reason, I've said this a lot, the reason that they rushed to war is, and I mean, France said, I mean, France, I hate France. You know, people write me, you know, why don't you go to France and be a DJ? I mean, come on. I wonder if those people... What they people would have said during the Clinton administration, if people said, "You're criticizing Clinton. Why don't you go? Why don't you leave the country if you don't like Clinton?" Anyway, it wasn't rocket science. People like Scott Ritter, who was head of the weapons program. I mean, he spoke all over the country. There's this video out now called "Uncovered" in the name of it that has CIA agent after State Department guy that people that have quit because they were so offended by the lies told by Bush and Cheney and Colin Powell, and particularly the lies that Colin Powell told in the United Nations, that they quit after someone had been in there for 25 years because they told the government exactly the opposite. They have no weapons. They pose no threat. But now, since this politics is kind of like, you know, contact sport, and it's ding dong, the Wicked Witch is dead, and we've elevated this tin pot dictator who, you know, albeit did tremendous damage to people, the majority of it under the aegis of the United States and particularly Republican government, into that somehow that this is this great strive forward to secure ourselves. That's just BS.
Well, I don't know about Scott Ritter, because that guy started singing a different tune, but as far as the United Nations was concerned, for 17 resolutions over 12 years after the first Gulf War was over with, why would they have all those resolutions for Iraq to disarm if they didn't honestly believe that those weapons could be there? Why would they have all those inspectors go there? And I'll tell you another thing, if Bush and Cheney were really lying, I mean, if it comes out that they were really lying, it could hurt them politically. This guy, he's got a pretty good chance to go in there for another 4 years. Why don't they just put him in there?
Just plant weapons?
Yeah, I mean, to the conspiracy theorists, I mean, it's very conceivable that could happen.
You know, they just move on. I mean, it's down the memory hole. Weapons of mass destruction, you know, people just don't talk about it anymore. It's just, it's like a code word now for leftists or liberals. You know, if you bring up weapons of mass destruction, there goes one of those liberals talking about weapons of mass destruction. Because what we're involved now is this grand crusade to reconstruct Iraq. Well, who the hell gave the United States permission to do that? There is something called international law. The United States violated international law and had to lie in order to do it. France said, I didn't even finish that point, let's give it, the inspectors another 30 days. Well, Bush knew that they would, I mean, Bush knows nothing. I mean, Bush is zero. He's one of the dumbest, probably the dumbest man that's ever occupied the presidency. He knows nothing about nothing. He's an empty suit. He's all hat and no cows or whatever the hell they call it. And the people that have their hand up the back of this sock puppet said, look, if we wait 30 days, they'll be able to tell there's no weapons of mass destruction and we won't have our invasion and we won't win the 2002 elections and we won't be able to establish our oil outpost in the Middle East and we won't be able to use all our fancy weapons that your dad's firm, the Carlyle Group, makes, and then we won't be able to rebuild it with, Cheney's saying this, with my company. All right, I got to roll. Thank you. Okay, press this button, and we're taking about a three-minute break.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Jimmy, thanks for driving to the party. Hey, you've been the designated driver for like the past three Fridays now.
It's the holiday season. I'm just trying to help a brother out, Ray.
You're up to something.
Hi, Jimmy. I heard you're the designated driver tonight. That's so cool of you.
You know me, Mr. Responsibility.
Can you give me a ride home? If it's not too much trouble.
No trouble. Just let me know when you're ready.
Thanks. You're such a sweetie.
Jimmy, I'm starving, dude. Let's get something to eat.
Nah, I'm about ready to call it a night, Ray.
What? We're going home? Now?
Jimmy, I'm ready to go if you are. You want to go get breakfast? I'm starving.
Yeah, that sounds good. We just got to drop Ray off first.
Designated drivers are the true VIPs of every holiday party. And Budweiser is saying thank you with a chance to win a VIP trip for two to the concert of your choice. Just visit designateddriver.com to enter and learn more. You must be 21 and a resident of the U.S. or Puerto Rico, except California and Maui County, Hawaii. See participating retailers for complete rules. Sweepstakes ends January 1st, 2004. No purchase necessary. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Are you suffering from reoccurring minor aches and pains? Do you have arthritis or an old injury that flares up from time to time? Now there's an inexpensive natural solution available to curb these aches and pains. The GrabberMyCole Adhesive Body Warmer. Portable, convenient, air-activated, these little heating pads provide over 12 hours of soothing relief from sore muscles, aching backs, and arthritis pain. 12 hours! Find the GrabberMyCole Adhesive Body Warmer in the pain relief aisle at your local Meijer stores or visit warmers.com to find other local retailers. Looking for pain relief? With Adhesive Body Warmer, you're getting warmer.
Hunting, fishing, camping, skiing, snowmobiling. You look forward to your favorite winter activities, but sometimes the cold drives you back inside. It's time to get warmer with Grabber My Cold Warmers. Grabber's line of air-activated hand, toe, body, and foot warmers keep you warm and toasty for hours. They conveniently fit in pockets, bags, or glove compartments, so you'll always be ready to battle the cold. Grabber My Cold Warmers. Get warmer. Available at Cabela's, Sport Mart, Dunham's, Dick's Sporting Goods, Sports Authority, MC Sports, REI, Target, and Meijer, or visit warmers.com to find other local retailers.
I was at a sorority delivering some exciting news about 7. So now with Sprint, your unlimited night minutes start at 7 p.m. instead of at 9.
More talking every weekday! It's just so awesome! Look, it's 7 now!
Where will I tell them about the clear calls.
Introducing unlimited night minutes starting at 7 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. That's 2 more hours each weeknight. With the PCS free and clear area-wide plan, get 1,000 anytime minutes to share between two phones for $50 a month for the first 3 months, $70 a month thereafter. With this plan, call to anywhere in the U.S. from anywhere in your extended calling area while on the Sprint nationwide PCS network. Plus, unlimited PCS to PCS calling and nationwide long distance are included. PCS from Sprint, the clear difference in wireless.
Shared plans require qualified credit. 2-year agreement required. Activation and termination fees apply. Off-network roaming and calls outside local area extra. Taxes, surcharges, and fees excluded. Not available everywhere. Network covers over 240 million people. See store for extended calling areas and details.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
Attention homeowners, 3.99. You heard it right, 3.99%. American Equity Mortgage has just lowered interest rates. Effective immediately, American Equity is offering you a never-before-advertised 3.99 rate. This is for a very limited time only, so I urge you to call now. American Equity Mortgage guarantees to save you money at 3.99, and American Equity Mortgage will help you pay off all those 18% credit cards that have proven to cost you money every month. You gotta love it at 3.99. Can you believe it? You know it won't last too long. American Equity Mortgage makes it fast and easy. 3.99. Call now. 888-71-LOAN-1. 888-71-L-O-A-N. Then the number one. $3.99 can't last too long. Call now. 888-71-LOAN-1. 888-71-L-O-A-N. Then the number one.
Rate subject to APR 4.23. Rate subject to increase after consummation.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thank you very much. WRIF Detroit, exactly midnight Eastern time. If you're listening in England, damn, what time is it there? Like 6 a.m. or something like that? If you're on the West Coast, it's only 9 o'clock. And when you email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, I always appreciate, although not necessary, to put the city or the state that you're calling from. If it's like a security issue, you know, don't do it. I'm just curious where people are calling in from. We're talking about the capture of Saddam. And by the way, my webmaster, Bill, I never know whether he wants me to say his last name on the air, but he's also the webmaster, and you can go to my site, Peter Werby, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E. It's W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com. And I'm using that charitably because it was Bill that got it back in shape. And it's a brand new Peter Werby website. It's still a work in progress, which is what Bill says about his website, which is revolutionaryworker.com. Quote is, we are very pissed off. And you can actually go down to the bottom where the counter is, and you can link directly to Bill's site. Anyways, he thought you could use this on the air, that a lawyer, Philip Berg, attorney for Ellen Mariani, wife of Louis Mariani, who died in United Airlines Flight 175 when it was flown into the World Trade Center, announced today in the wake of the capture of Saddam that she will seek an extraordinary writ by the honorable court to immediately depose Saddam Hussein, a critical witness to support the merits of her suit in an action against defendant George W. Bush. Well, whoa, that ought to be interesting to see where that all goes. Probably nowhere. Mike and Harper Woods writes in the call talk yes at yahoo.com. Now, this is what I mean, where you get this kind of official Republican propaganda posing as news. And this is a good point. Micah says he loves the show. I was listening to one of the right-wing radio stations this morning and laughed out loud when I heard them say, quote, Saddam is a bit disoriented, but he is talking. We are hopeful that he will cooperate and tell us where he's hidden his weapons of mass destruction. Close quote. Now, you know, how could you hide all this? Remember Cheney and Powell said they knew exactly where they were, and they knew how much it all represented in liters and tons and all of this. And it wasn't, we're gonna hide this away. We got another week. Let's go hide this away. Why would he hide them away? They knew he didn't have any, and if they would have had any weapons of mass destruction that were usable. Remember the lie that Prime Minister Tony Blair put forth, that these weapons that Saddam had could be operational in 45 minutes. Well, if that would have actually been the case, the United States and Britain never would have invaded. I mean, that's kind of logical proof that this never existed. Any real threat. All right, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with me? The big empty. All right. Thank you very much, Rick Fox. Hi, WRIF. You're on the air. Are you with me? Am I doing something wrong here? No. I just think they're not there. Got to hold on. No. Just testing it there. Line four? Okay. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well, sir. Thank you.
First time caller, long time listener. My name's George. I was calling, did you hear about the story, it was on the front page of the Oakland Press, about the student in Oxford that got suspended for handing out flyers for the local band Drainer?
How'd that happen?
Well, Drainer is this heavy metal band, and they're having a show at the Emerald Theater on December 28th, and this kid was handing out flyers in the school, and on the flyer is a woman sitting on the edge of a tongue in a open mouth. The woman is fully clothed, and the school found it objectionable and suspended him for 2 days for handing him out to his friends.
Wow. Yeah, well, you know, they get pretty high-handed in high school, don't they?
Yeah, well, you know, it's hilarious to me because I read the article, and I went to the band's website, which is drainer.com, and checked out the flyer, and the girls wearing more clothes than the girls in high school are these days.
I got you. Can I send you a bill?
Sure, certainly.
I'll do it, since I'm going to send you a bill. I'll let you give the date. So Drainer's playing out at the Emerald Wynn?
December 28th, that's what I found on their website.
Right.
I just think it's outrageous as a parent of a high school student that they're going this far to violate the First Amendment rights and a child's constitutional right to hand out flyers and to censor art is just outrageous.
Well, at least it wasn't like that school in South Carolina where they had kids handcuffed behind their back and pulled guns on them and had dogs on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's crazy what's going on today. And I got to commend you for saying what real people think and what people on the street really think. We appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you calling, George. Thank you very much.
All righty.
Bye now. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
I just like to start off by saying I'm 18, go to Lawrence Tech, and it's the first time calling. And I'd like to reiterate your point you said about gathering all the information you could before making a strong stand. I used to think that I had a stand on, I was dead set Republican, knew Bush was the guy for me, until I started going to school here. A couple of German foreign exchange students moved in across the hall from me.
Uh-huh.
And these guys are so educated. They actually take the time. Like kids around here, what their parents tell them is what it is. And it's these Germans actually take the time to look up. They're the people that told me about the Carlyle Group. That's when I first found out about it. And they actually form a smart opinion. It's so important to actually go and look in your facts and see what it is. I'm just trying to get out the message out there to any other 18-year-olds or teenagers, maybe the first time voting in the election coming up, to actually take time and research it. Don't just what your parents say goes. Go research the candidates. And I think a lot of people would be surprised if they actually found out about the Carlyle Group and some other stuff that Bush has taken place.
I think so. By the way, I'm so happy with this new website that was designed for me. If you go to it, it's Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and what I did is I put three news sites, buzzflash.com, commondreams.org, and counterpunch.org. And for someone who just gets off of watching Fox News, or for that matter, you know, ABC or NBC News, and then would go to these sites, they'd have to confront these polar opposite views, whereas people don't like that. They like to be told, particularly in a society where people, you know, worship authority. We're supposed to be these, you know, democratic, you know, small d democratic society. Yet so many people in this society worship authority. I put this up here. It's got a kind of like tablets, and it's right on my site, and it says, "Thou shalt question authority." Job number one for people with a democratic personality, again, small d, as opposed to authoritarian personality. And I'll tell you that to some people would find that offensive in and of itself. Thou shalt question authority. Oh, we're not supposed to do that. These people, you know, they're in charge.
Yeah, it's funny. I wanted to say about the media, too. I'd love that if it was the media was actually in it to get everybody well informed, but the media is actually in it to make money. And if you're flipping through the channels and you see Saddam captured, huge day for the U.S., you're going to sit there and watch it. You say, see Saddam captured, big deal, let's talk about the weather, you're going to flip right past that channel.
Sure.
So.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for thinking. It's what's necessary for a democratic society. Now, if you go to my website, you know, now everything used to be underlined. Now you got to really go with your cursor, because mostly everything in red is a link. There's a story on there by Greg Palast called "Jessica Lynch Captures Saddam." How come I can't think of his name? This one is called "We Caught the Wrong Guy." By William Rivers Pitt, who's a very, very interesting writer. So check it out. Oh yeah. Also, I forgot about that little deal. You know, Strom Thurmond, he was this old, racist and segregationist. Remember Trent Lott, the senator from Mississippi, who was complimenting him, and then, you know, got booted out of the leadership of the Senate. Well, it turns out that old Strom Thurmond had a love child with the family's black maid. You know, the hypocrisy of these right-wingers is unending and astounding. Also, when you're on the website, almost every graphic has a link, too. So just click on that. I don't have anything for "Thou Shalt Question Authority." It says, "Welcome to Peter Werby's site dedicated to resistance to authoritarian rule and visions of a new world." That's not written well, is it? It means that's dedicated to resistance to visions of a new world. Huh. Okay. I'll take care of that. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Good. I got a couple of things to say about, I've lived in this country for 11 years. I lived in the communist country with my family, and I know what, like, dictators do to people. Dictators are evil. They're nasty. Saddam Hussein was nasty for people. Let's not forget about how he killed his own family members and how he tortured people from the north to south.
Nobody is disputing what an awful man he was and the awful crimes he committed.
Right, I understand. And everybody wants to blame George Bush for everything that's going on. George Bush came into office the wrong time. Let's not forget that Clinton could have avoided it. I mean, 9/11, there was camps in Afghanistan that Osama bin Laden was making, and Clinton didn't do anything about it. George Bush came in office the last 2 years when Clinton was in power. The economy went to shit. George Bush had to come into office and try to fix everything, and after 9/11, I mean, what can he have done?
Hey, George Bush got all this information. If you go to my website at peterwerby.com, click on 9/11. There is this New York Post, which is this conservative daily newspaper in New York, and the headline from the end of 2001 is "Bush Knew." He was warned repeatedly that there was going to be a spectacular attack on United States major symbols of this country. He took a vacation right at the time that Russian and German and Israeli intelligence were saying that something is going to happen. In June of 2001, in the newspaper, I saw a report, Osama bin Laden threatening a terrorist act of major proportions. And still, the security at all the airports, contrary to what the Gore Commission had said was necessary, look, it's under his watch. And trying to blame things on Clinton is just don't make it.
I mean, I'm not blaming Clinton, but Clinton could have did something to prevent this. He could have did a lot of things to prevent this. Clinton just stayed back and just watched the world just do whatever they wanted. And America has to do something. America is the world police. They have to be there. I mean, if America wasn't superpower, the USSR would be superpower. There would be communism everywhere. To blame America, this is the best country to live in. You get the land of opportunities here. I will live here and die here, and I will die for this country than any other country
in
the world.
Wait, how old are you?
I'm 21 years old.
Well, and you're in the service?
No, I'm not, sir.
So when are you joining? Are you going down there on Monday?
Oh, no, I'm not joining unless they want me to, sir.
Well, they probably are going to be a little short of soldiers. I mean, you're willing to die for this country. Go ahead, because there's a lot of people over there that don't want to die for George Bush's oil schemes. You seem to think that it's something different, and I would suspect, rather than letting other people do the fighting and dying, you might want to do it.
I mean, for what this country has done to me and gave me and my family freedom and brought me here from away from communism, I would do anything.
Where did you live?
I lived in Albania under Enver Hoxha's dictator ruling.
Yeah, he was a pretty awful guy as well. But, you know, you could have gone to England or Canada or Italy or France or Denmark or Sweden or Finland or Norway.
But it's still not a good country as this. This is the best country to live in. I mean, yeah, we have issues that we got to deal with. Every country has to deal with those issues. But, I mean... It had to be sooner or later for Saddam to go. Everyone knew Saddam had to go.
Well, yeah, but and Saddam probably was on the verge of going. His country was pretty much occupied by United Nations inspectors, and he was willing to allow even a greater occupation. As you know, how quickly those dictatorships can end, like in Albania and like in Romania, where Ceausescu, another grisly tyrant, they're there one day and they're gone the next. Bush wanted to invade Iraq. He wanted to do it for domestic political reasons for this country. He wanted to do it to establish an oil outpost. And Bush lied, and people have died.
I understand. He could have handled it better. He could have, he could have sugarcoated a little bit better. He kind of went into office saying that I got the sword and I'm willing to use the sword. And another thing is to disrespect France and Europe. Europe is what made America America. You know what I mean? Yeah, we fought the Revolutionary War against England, but Europe had a lot to do with America being America till this day. And then to disrespect France and to pour wine in the middle of the street saying that this is not good. But I don't understand. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that. I appreciate your comments.
And thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. 313-298-WRIF. Let me see. Darnell says, hello, Peter. Finding Saddam at this point in time is the worst thing that could happen to this country. Huh. Let's see what he says. It seems people can't understand that we are at a critical time for voting, and it's scary enough people vote for things such as hunting and weapon freedom. Finding Saddam will control light thinkers and destroy our country if we don't wake up. Peter, I can't emphasize the importance to people that who cares about Saddam? What about our families and jobs? One more thing, if you don't drive a BMW and live in a corporate office, you're not a true Bush buddy. You're nothing but a blind follower. The students at Davenport University think of you highly and keep up the good work. So is that like Davenport, Iowa, or am I missing? Anyways, wherever you are, hello. Where are we going now, Mr. Fox? Thank you, sir. So that was a combination of thank you, so, and thank you, sir. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, it's Dave from Detroit.
Hi, Dave.
I have been listening to this show since the days of Harvey Wachinski.
Wow.
Yeah, You know, one thing nobody's touched on, it's like earlier in the week, Bush made a comment he's going to look into the Halliburton overcharging of, you know, the government and stuff.
Right.
And then, boom, here we go. We catch Saddam Hussein. All of a sudden, what? It's swept under the carpet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, typical.
Well, you know, one thing, and Dave, you are absolutely right, because every time
that's
there's
typical.
A big scandal.
Every time.
Yeah, I'm going to mention a name to you, and the audience will hear it and think of how long you have it's been. I mean, I even forgot it. Enron. Enron.
That's not that long ago.
Yeah, I know, but it's all forgotten.
King's boys.
Yeah, it's all forgotten. And the whole Enron scandals and the connection.
Taxpayers are going to pay for it.
Exactly.
Just like the savings and loans with Daddy Bush.
Yeah, and Enron was one of the reasons that Bush decided to invade Iraq when he did, because that was threatening to unravel the government of George Bush. As it was, remember, he lost, you know, people are saying, can Howard Dean beat George W. Bush? Hey, Gore beat him, right? I mean, he got the popular vote. People were
500,000 votes.
Yeah, people were wise to Bush. They didn't. The majority of people didn't want him in as the president. But the Enron scandal threatened to destroy any chance that Bush had to have a Republican Congress. And if it wouldn't have been for the decision at the time that they did to all of a sudden announce, oh, Saddam Hussein represents this incredible threat, there would have been easily a majority Democratic Congress elected in 2002. So all of this death, all of this destruction is based on the most cynical manipulation of reality. And we have people in office who are willing to let thousands of people die to expend hundreds of billions of dollars of our collective fortunes that we work our butts off for every week for their grand schemes of corporate domination.
I'm so glad the Rolling Stone and all these rock and rollers and these actors are like putting up tons of money for these like just to support these, you know, the Democrats or the third parties and stuff, man. It's about time that it looks like we've actually got a movement just to like try to snuff this like right wing nonsense that's going on.
But what's going to happen? I mean, people say, gee, in October of 2004, right before the election, what they call this the October surprise, they're going to catch Osama bin Laden. Or, amazing, they're going to have another terrorist attack on the United States, and the United States is going to have to fly off to war, and you know, Georgie can get his flyboy suit on, you know, and so it's all about manipulation. It's Goebbels. The Nazi propaganda minister.
And as far as the way they're like monitoring the media and stuff, remember in the 60s and late early 70s, the Roland Martin's Laughing? I just saw some commercial for like these old tapes that they're trying to peddle, and I couldn't believe how much they reamed on the Nixon and the Johnson administration. There was this one guy that was one of the guys from the Watergate thing, and they're like toying around with him, and he goes, "Yeah, well, why did you agree to this deal?" He goes, "Well, they promised to fly me out of here with a plane with two right wings." it was just funny as hell. You
gotta love it.
I didn't understand it when I was a kid. It was in like 1969, 70 when I was a little kid, but it just, you know, it was a right wing government back then, but it's nothing like. They had no control like what they do now. It's just sickening how much control they have.
You know, I forgot all about this. There was these more, and you just said Nixon, there were these more tapes that came out, and again, you're just saying the most awful things. I'm going to go look for it. Hey, thanks a lot for joining us.
The Kennedy papers, all the information was supposed to be released and made public, and then the Bush administration silenced it.
Yeah.
You know, it was supposed to be released for public, you know, after so many years, it's supposed to be, you know, right for the public to see, and then the Bush administration silenced it.
Yeah, forget it.
All the information.
Right, right.
You know, and I'm sure you've heard about it, that George Bush Sr., you know, was in Dallas when the assassination happened.
All right.
He was a CIA mole.
Dave.
And he denied being down there, and they found a Diners Club receipt with his signature that proved he was down there.
Well, we're getting too far afield. But you're right. There is just a massive amount of information that never makes it beyond the headlines of these disinformation sources that claim to be news sources. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, man. Love your show.
Thank you so. Appreciate it. Peter Werby here with you, 313-298-WRIF. Call TalkYes at yahoo.com. Check out my new website, newly designed, Peter Werby, PeterWerbe.com. There's going to be a lot more on it, but we just kind of wanted to, you know, get it out there. And it is. Your comments on that are welcome as well. I mean, send those by email, though. Hi, Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, you know, there's still a country over in the Middle East that's denied or defied every U.N. resolution passed against it. It's defying U.N. resolutions as we speak.
What terrible Arabic nation is that?
Israel.
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, they're defying that resolution that says stop building the wall, and they're continuing to build the wall and receive our tax dollars.
Yep. And actually violating the federal statutes that forbid nations from taking military aid and use them for internal repression.
Yeah, but that's never bothered us. I mean, look at Chile.
Yeah.
We practically paid for that coup, and then we trained the people that did the coup, and we gave them all the military weapons they needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those were our helicopters they were dropping Chileans out of over the ocean.
That's right.
So,
well, it's a little dismal, but, you know, I think a lot of people, hopefully at some point it'll be a majority, will just understand the racket that we're being subjected to. Thank you.
Bye.
Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF is our telephone number here. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, I'm glad you and your listeners are blasting the press. I want to pile on a little bit with my rant.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I did listen and watch the press this morning, and basically what they did to us was take a somewhat sensational story, blow it right way out of proportion, and use it like a hammer to beat our brains out. Unfortunately, most people can't tell they're totally being manipulated. So the problem is they so blind us with sensationalism, and then spin the story for Bush and against the Democratic candidates by saying, oh, now what is Dean going to say? This is pure unadulterated propaganda, Republican propaganda. Because basically, the capture of Saddam really has nothing to do with the decision to go to war and the lies therein. The press, too, the press didn't even come close to, didn't even come close to question Bush in the same manner, like, Bush told us Saddam had all these weapons of mass destruction everywhere. Now that, you know, we've taken over the country and found nothing, boy, now what's Bush going to, what's the hopeless, hapless, idiot Bush going to say now? You know, nothing like that. So lest anyone out there think that our press is not totally corrupt and dishonest and totally just working for the Republicans, or, you know, think the press is maybe liberal, you know, look at the Clinton pardoning Mark Rich. We heard about it every day for weeks, and all you saw was Clinton and Denise Ritt standing together. What about Bush and Kenneth Lay?
Yeah, you know? Whoa, gee, that's just such old stuff. I mean, I don't know, why would you even bring that up?
Here they were good friends. This guy did way more damage to our country than Mark Rich, who he did nothing, and Saddam Hussein and his, you know, so-called forces of axis of evil.
Yeah.
They couldn't even do with the damage that Kenneth Lay and his corporate axis of evil.
Well, as I said, that's one of the reasons, one of the probably 8 or 10 reasons that Bush, the people behind Bush decided it was time for war against Iraq. All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Here's this New York Times article. We were talking earlier about this slaughter that Cheney took part in. It's Cheney's bird hunting trip to the exclusive Rolling Rock Club in the hills of southwestern Pennsylvania. You know, this ultra-wealthy character. So they hang with these people. They shot, are you ready for this? He and 9 others, so 10 of them, shot some 400 out of 500 pen-raised pheasants released for the morning hunt. So they had these pheasants that were never in the wild. They were raised in pens. They released 500 of them, and Cheney and his rich buddies slaughtered 400 of them. You know, they didn't let them all loose at once, I'm sure. No one might have noticed the episode, but it was the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Including the detail, they reported it, that the vice president had shot more than 70 of the ring-necked pheasants himself. Now, a couple of things. One, these are magnificent birds. And the other thing, hunting pheasants isn't really the toughest thing in the world. I mean, anybody that's ever done that or even just strode through open fields in the fall, you flush these big, slow-flying babies out, and it's pretty easy to, take them down. And so, this isn't hunting. It's nothing. I don't even know what you'd call it. Let's see. As a result, a lot of other people noticed the fallen birds. Hunters who pursue birds in the wild, the Democratic presidential candidates in the Humane Society of the United States, which likened the shootings to the first day of the Iraq War. Wayne Pascal, the senior vice president of the Humane Society, who pronounced himself outraged, said this can only be called a shooting gallery operation. Hunting is supposed to involve some opportunity for the animal to evade the hunter. Hunting in this setting is reduced to mass killing. And this is perfect for Cheney. This is perfect for people that always want the edge up and have lived their life always having an advantage. Never having to do the hard work that the ordinary people do, that are always on the inside, that don't have to go slogging through a muddy field hoping that they'll be able to flush out one or two pheasants for the day. Instead, they released 500 of them, and there's Kill Crazy Cheney killing 70 of them himself. I mean, these people are so repulsive. And to think that they have control of our country, and to think that they're people that actually idolize them. These are, it's like peasants in the 17th or 16th century idolizing the barons and the aristocracy because they know they're so little themselves, they can only become fully, a full person through love of their betters, of, this uncritical stance towards those above us on the food chain. Man, my cold's starting to kick in, too. Cheney, who almost never speaks to the news media, had no comment on his trip or the identity of his hunting companions, and his office provided only sparse information. White House officials also declined to release photographs they have of the vice president in full hunting mode. But the vice president's spokesman, Kevin Kellum, did say that the pheasants were clean, packed, and sent to those less fortunate. They sent them off to charity. But it's somebody that wants to do that. You know the old, almost kind of corny deal about after the brave kills the deer, and as the life runs out of his hunt, because this is part of their culture, this is part of what sustains them. He says, "Thank you, little sister, for giving your life." And so here is the polar opposite. This is the mentality. I mean, I'm sorry if you think this is a stretch. This is a mentality of people that okay mass killings by bombers going over or shoving people into gas ovens. These are people that have no idea of fair play, that want to win, and don't care about anyone else. You got to go back maybe to F. Scott Fitzgerald, the Great Gatsby. That's who we have running our country.
What a great time talking to Billy Bob Thornton about his new movie, Bad Santa.
And you've brought anal sex into the mainstream.
Well, I do what I can for the cause.
I like the idea that not only have you brought that into the mainstream, but it's on fat chicks as well.
That's right.
Okay, so who's PO'd about the movie? Somebody's got to be bitching about it.
They got to stir up controversy about everything. All of a sudden, it's like, it's a Santa Claus movie, and he's like cursing, and it's not about Santa Claus, it's about a con artist.
Yeah,
right.
I have to tell you, I appreciated John Ritter, but I didn't realize he had as much range as he had until you worked with him.
I was really proud of the fact that I got to put him in a movie that showed him as an actor.
What was his famous line? Was it, we're going to have to bleep this, he said, stick, was that it?
Yeah. I also like the part where he says, he's talking about what he heard, overheard at the big and tall. and he can't even say the word, he spells it.
Oh, yeah, about another anal sex reference.
That's right.
I ain't listening to you no more.
Stop it!
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rift.
That's Rift!
101.01 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Rift. Rocks. The Rift.
Riff rocks the West Side Tuesday night.
It's Party Central on the West Side this Tuesday night with 101 WRIF at Snooker's Pool and Pub.
In Livonia on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just off I-96.
Yeah! Join Meltdown, the big unit, for the biggest Tuesday night party in the Motor City.
Join in the WRIF Pool Challenge to score awesome Riff prizes.
Like $101 gift certificates to Murray's Jewelry on Plymouth Road in Redford. CDs, t-shirts, tickets, and so much more.
Come on out and see what you've been missing Tuesday nights with the Riff at Snookers.
Have you lost your f***ing mind?
Not yet.
That's this Tuesday night at the Westside Party Command Center, Snooker's Tour and Pub, on the northwest corner of Schoolcraft and Inkster, just up I-96 in Livonia, with the Motor City's home of rock and roll.
101 WRIF.
Riff Rock.
Of the corruption, the absolute corruption of the Bush administration, that it is not even a government, it is actually a racket that rips off the American people, you know, whether it's sending billions to Iraq or any other numerous scams, that they get caught. They get caught. This is Cheney's company, who's still paying them, actually, and they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and interestingly, they catch Saddam Hussein, so no one's talking about it. We were also talking about this mass slaughter that Cheney took part in, where they shot off 400 pheasants, pen raised. John from Madison Heights writes in regards to Dick Cheney's shootout, it was nothing more than an outdoor slaughterhouse. They could have just as well gone to a real slaughterhouse, but then, of course, they would never want to do that. They would have to work alongside of illegal aliens that work those places. What a disgrace Cheney is. And they were talking about this hunt club where all the wealthy elite meet to slaughter. This isn't a hunt. This is a slaughter. And the New York Times couldn't get any information because they want to protect their wealthy patrons. The employees of the club said that they did not know what had become of Scott Wakefield, a dog handler at the club, who was quoted by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette as saying that 500 birds had been released from nets for the hunt. Well, gee, maybe he is, in fact, out of there or something like that. If nets were used, the bird hunting experts said, Cheney and his party were probably pre-positioned with shotguns on the ground or in blinds in trees. Another possibility was that the birds were released from a tower with Cheney and the others ready for them on the ground. A final possibility was that the pheasants were released early in the day or the night before, and Cheney and his companions then went after them on foot. I doubt that. You really think they could have found 400 of them? Now, there was... remember, they were Cheney's spokesman. And, you know, these people lie all the time. I mean, if their mouths are open, they're lying. So you kind of know. Well, the spokesman for Cheney, Kevin Kellum, said, they didn't go to waste. They go to hunger relief charities. Kellum's offer said he could not provide the names or locations of any charities or soup kitchens that received the birds and did not know how they were prepared when they were served or who, in fact, ate them. Huh. Well, didn't he just say they don't go to waste? They go to hunger relief charities? How does he know that? Pheasant under glass was an aristocratic dish of an earlier era. Today's pheasant aficionados say the birds are delicious, although bony, and can be tough if improperly cooked. Well, we wouldn't want to do that for our homeless, would we? All right, let's go to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, Peter, am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, that is a pretty revolting story, and it makes me think about how happy they are, Rummy and the rest of them, whenever we have when we're digging into the war. They were right down giddy, you know. Remember how much fun Rumsfeld was having. In fact, he didn't look that young in the 60s when he worked for Nixon.
Right.
And this is just the same administration, pretty much, the same usual suspects, as far as I'm concerned. We impeached him with Nixon. They had the Iran-Contra thing with Reagan, and they're back. And the reason they are so good is because they've had many years to get this down. And I don't know if we're going to have another election, frankly. I'm really wondering if we are, how between, you know, them rigging the machines, which they're busy doing, and then gerrymandering all over the country, things aren't looking good, you know. And
I agree with you.
Right. If worse comes to worse, they can always go to the Supreme Court or the Congress, which is all Republicans. So, you know, we're pretty much, it's not looking good, not at all. I'm pretty depressed about it, and I know a lot of people are. And in the 60s, I'm feeling just like I was then and during Reagan. And in spite of Clinton's faux pas, I felt safe and hopeful for the first time. Not safe, per se, but, you know, somewhat and hopeful for the first time in my life for this country and for the human race. And now, between what they're doing to the environment and these hideous wars, and you know, next we're tromping off to Iran, I believe. And I heard, talk about despicable stories. I mean, isn't it amazing, Peter, that every day, almost hourly, if not more, I am staggering around with astonishment of the horrors I'm hearing, one case or another. Did you happen to read an article in the Rolling Stone magazine by Michael Moore where he's talking about the whole 9/11 and the 15 hostages being Arabs and the bin Laden family being flown out, et cetera,
sure,
et cetera? Well, many people have heard that story, but one of the parts I hadn't heard was this one. I don't know if you heard this, that James Baker... the family victims of 9/11. Now, Republicans and the right wingers, please listen to this out there. When they say you're unpatriotic, right? If you help the enemy, well, the families of 9/11, the victims sued Bin Laden. Wait a minute, how did it go? I'm sorry, I'm losing my thought here.
Well, there's some suits against Bin Laden. There's other suits against Bush.
Wait. No, they're suing Bin Laden's family. But get this, James Baker was sent over to defend and represent the Bin Ladens against the 9/11 victims.
Yeah, well, Baker they cut loose Bin Laden, who was one of the partners of George Bush Sr.
Right.
In the Carlyle Group. Yeah, I mean, it is this web, and it's like I said, it's not a government, it's not an administration, it is a 100% corrupt racket.
Right.
And And but what they've done to the casual, you know, watcher of television is they've so scared the pants off everyone and impress upon people the only way we can be safe is to turn everything over to essentially these bunglers. You got to remember, I mean, it's the Rumsfeld and Daddy Bush that got us in this mess with the and Cheney with Saddam Hussein in the first place. So and you look at their business practices, they screw everything up. Everything they do winds up in a disaster. And it's the common people, whether it's the taxpayers here or the debt of other people or, you know, a few hundred Marines under, you know, Reagan in Lebanon. It's endless. And they never suffer. No matter how many laws they break, no matter how much they violate the Constitution, the laws of Congress, even if they do jail time, they're back and they're wealthy and they're well-connected and they're making the decisions that affect the middle class and the working class. And some of the bozos in this class think that these ultra-rich elites are actually interested in their interests.
Yes.
How can they be so stupid?
I can't imagine.
Let me get some more calls. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, for what you're doing. Thanks a lot.
All right. It's a pleasure to do it. Although my cold is starting to kick in, and I'm starting to zoop, as we call it. Are we going to line four now, or is okay? Thank you very much. Here, Dana in Birmingham says she's a new listener. I turned on the radio and heard you talking about how my generation is going to see what really happened in Iraq in 30 years and continued listening to the program. I just wanted to say thank you for letting me know that there are people who know know this war and the Bush administration is full of crap and are willing to do something to put an end to this hate week that has become American media. People like you going public and exposing the deceit of our government are going to be a key part of taking back America. Yeah, this whole country has been hijacked by this illegal regime in Washington. And they're doing everything they can to confuse people, to frighten people. And if it comes down to it, they will just, remember, General Tommy Frank said, if there's another serious terrorist attack in this country, that this could end, as he put it, the constitutional experiment. The constitutional experiment. Actually, let me just tell you this real quickly because we're getting towards the end. I want to get a few more of you. I went to Windsor the other day. Was it Thursday or Friday? And I came back, and the border guard says, "So you know, you're supposed to look me right in the eye, and all these things I've said on the program about how to get through there easier." And so he had heard me saying this, and I went, "Oh no!" Well, he actually was a very interesting man. And he just began talking about elements of the program and different things that had been said. And one of the things he said, how do we know that quote that was in a Cigar Aficionado was accurate by Tommy Franks? Well, how do I know what he actually said there? I know what I read in a supposedly reputable magazine. But there's no reason to suspect those things aren't accurate. And I thought it was telling that after all these hundreds of years, a general, I mean, who runs countries when they're not democratic? The army. A general, an ex-general now, says this could end the constitutional experiment. These people in Washington are extraordinarily dangerous to our freedom. And they are creating the context where we are more at risk than we were previously. My opinion, yours at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. First of all, I want to thank you for still maintaining this forum, which is one of the only places where intelligent views are expressed on the radio. And the thing about Cheney is a fairly good segue into some of the points I want to make tonight about this administration being not only cruel but extremely evil. I'm going to start with the Iraq oil situation. The Iraq debt is estimated to be $385 billion to whomever lent this man money. Part of, if not all of this debt, was going to be repaid by the oil revenues generated when their oil fields returned back to production. Recently in the New York Times, there was an article about Iraqi oil production, and probably very few people know this, that every day in Iraq, 150,000 to 200,000 barrels of oil, which have been pulled out of the ground, have to be pumped back into the ground
In order to maintain pressure sufficient for any of the oil to be pulled out of the ground in Iraq, the whole point of much of what's going on now, and this is a subject you covered previously, I believe, when you talked about Richard Heinberg's book, The Party's Over.
Yeah, about oil, yeah.
All about peak oil and nothing else than about peak oil. And I will segue from there into the story that I've been reading recently about the World Trade Center collapse and all of the information that's accumulating, which suggests that the story that was already prepared when it happened is so false and wrong, it's terrifying. The buildings were imploded. This is part of the American plan to demonstrate that peak oil is the most important situation on the planet today. And if we don't get this thing straightened out pretty soon, the modern economies as we know today will cease to exist. The irony of it is that the people who are causing this are bringing about their own demise because they, like the rest of us, are totally dependent right now on these hydrocarbon energy resources, which most petroleum geologists would tell you are, for all intents and purposes, gone.
It is. We've reached peak oil, but, you know, they don't care. I mean, if they cared about the world, if they cared about... you know, the future generations, we would be making a crash program rather than using hundreds of billions of dollars to invade Iraq for a crash program to find other sources of non-polluting energy, which are out there. But they're so committed, they're so pathological in their greed that they only consider short-term gain and also their ability to administer power unchallenged. And I said there's 10... I use different figures, 8, 10, 12 reasons why Bush invaded Iraq. Another one, I've said that previously, that this was the opposition to the war worldwide and in this country was the biggest social movement that's ever existed on the planet. And Bush, under advice from war criminal Kissinger, felt if he would have listened to popular will throughout the world, that would erode his capacity to rule in an elite manner. So that's another reason why they had to go to war. Unnecessarily, of course. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. Now, this is interesting. Thomas writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Looking in the faces of the current people in the administration, they look to me like guys who didn't get laid for the last 20 years. Money, guns, and power seems to be their path to ecstasy. I like the other president with his intern better. This guy at least knew how to have fun. Your show is great. Keep up the good work. Maybe some problems there. We're in deep voodoo. This is just getting really intrigued by these emails. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Pete? I have to say I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I love your comments all the time. I just want to make a couple comments. First off, I'm very delighted that they did catch Saddam, but I do have a question. What next? I mean, you know, okay, fine, they caught Saddam. Whoop-de-doo. What are they going to do now? I mean, I just don't understand why America has to go in and act as a police force within every country. I mean, I was born and raised in Iraq, and I left after the Gulf War. And what a lot of people, what the American population doesn't see is what America does to these people. You know, I mean, like, my family had to leave, and it's like, when we left, we had to escape because of what happened. And,
sure.
I mean, we are... You know, we're scattered all over the place. I mean, I live here with my mom and dad. I have a sister in Canada. I have a brother in Sweden. I have another brother that's in Germany, and I never see them. I talk to them once in a while, but, you know, they can never come here. And it's like that's just one family because of what America has done. I mean, coming in, don't get me wrong, I love it here. I would not trade it for the world because of the freedom. But, I mean, they just went into a country where... You know, they had no business being there. If it wasn't for oil, they wouldn't be there.
Right, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you read what's going on in Israel. I mean, when we were back home, we used to get the newspapers, and we used to get, you know, unbiased news. And, I mean, the Israelis were killing Palestinians all the time. But there's no oil there, so nobody steps in. You know, I mean, there's bad on both sides because Palestinians kill Israelis as well. But, you know, you see all this bad media against the Palestinians.
Hey, is your family at all talking about going back?
You know what? To be completely honest with you, they caught Saddam, but I would not trust going back. Not for a long while. Just because you know, just my by me being there, I know how it is over there. When Saddam was in power, there was a lot of people, like, you know, we'll call them like militias or rebels, that feared him and that would not come out and that would not do anything. Now that he's gone, when America took over and Saddam was in hiding and everything, I still feel that they were just a little bit scared, because if they were to do anything now and he came back into power, they knew they would all be dead.
Right.
There was still the element of fear. So now that he's gone, I just, you know, I fear that they're all going to come out again.
Huh.
You know, I mean, it's happened before. I mean, you know, I think a caller on your show has said it before. If you watch Lawrence of Arabia, everything that's happening now happened back then. It's just going to keep repeating itself.
Yeah, it's, you know, what a shame. I mean, we here in the United States, you know, have pretty much been safe from all that. I mean, the September 11th was such a shock, because what happened on September 11th happens to people all around the world all the time. And what was different was that for the first time that there was that U.S. citizens or you know, or people in this country were the victims.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like you see all this stuff on the media. I mean, I know you don't really listen to everything on the media, but I mean, I can tell you firsthand, you know, with the Gulf War, they said there was no civilian casualties or barely any civilian casualties. I was there. I've seen it. I mean, I remember walking home from school and seeing, you know, a couple people dead on the street. And, you know, there was the, you know, I was really young, so you'll have to excuse me. There was a bomb shelter that actually was hit by an American missile that was mistaken for an intelligence center.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's a museum now. I mean, you know, many women and children were killed by it, but you never hear it.
Now, there was, I can't remember the figures, but there were thousands of civilians killed in Iraq in the first Gulf War. By the way, the United States has insisted that the Iraqi Ministry of Health stop counting civilian dead as, you know, who died as a result of the war, because, you know, looks bad. Hey, I gotta get out of here, so thank you.
I hope you feel better.
Yeah, I think it's just a little cold. All right, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hey, you know, I'll give a free ad. I was talking about a free ad earlier. I had this stuff called Zicam, Z-I-C-A-M, and essentially it's just this zinc nasal gel, and it really does the trick. I'd advise it. Let's see, a couple more here. The emails to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Today I heard in the news that we could divert most of the funds from the search for Saddam to the search for Bin Laden. And Case sent this. She says, shouldn't have that been better funded in the first place? Isn't he the enemy for the war on terrorism? If Afghanistan and Pakistan with nuclear weapons were sitting on such a large oil reserve, do you think we would have found Bin Laden when Enron hit? Yeah, get it. That's true. And Spider, who is the webmaster for CryingEagle.org, the war is not making us safer. And to be honest, if Bush has four more years, we'll have a new war for that term. War is profit to him and Halliburton. All right, got some great stuff coming up for interviews. Stay with us, and talk to you next week.
Don't put it off any longer. If you've ever thought about a career in radio or television, now is the time to call the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. Hey, this is Screaming Scott Randall from The Riff. I went to Specs Howard, and look where it's gotten me. I've interviewed and hung out with celebrities at this year's MTV Video Music Awards, flown off to Ireland with a plane load of Riff winners, sat backstage and mingled with guys like Eddie Van Halen, Steve Tyler, and Joe Perry of Aerosmith, Godsmack, and more. I really do have the best job in the world, and you can too. The Specs program is built to suit people who want to pursue a college degree, as well as those people who normally wouldn't think of going back to school. You just can't lose. If you want to enter the workforce quickly, you can complete hands-on training in as little as 8 months. If you're planning on taking the college route, the Specs Hour program may be applied towards a degree at up to 14 area colleges and universities, including Rochester College, which now operates a satellite office on the Specs Hour campus. Call for your free personal tour by December 19th, because their next available morning, afternoon, and evening classes are forming now. Call 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. The Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan. This is where you start. It's where I started.
Do you feel like half the man you used to be? Do you feel tired and irritable? Are you losing your sex drive? If so, you could have low testosterone.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. Testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now you can boost your testosterone naturally. Introducing Testostazine, the powerful new testosterone-boosting system I developed for men who are starting to feel their age. Testostazine supports your body's ability to produce testosterone the way you did when you were younger, so you can restore your energy, youthful sex drive, and staying power. Testosterone keeps a man energetic and sexually confident. You can feel that way no matter what your age. Testostazine can help.
Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of testosterone. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Guaranteed to work for you or your money back. Call 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
The Parkway Chrysler Jeep year-end sale starts now with a special holiday kickoff this Monday from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. with the lowest payments of the year. I'm not kidding. Like a PT Cruiser for $79 a month. Jeep Liberty for $149 a month. Grand Cherokee's just $199 a month. The all-new Pacifica, only $189 a month. Plus, get out of your lease 8 months early for free. Up to $6,000 in rebates, and everyone gets employee discounts and lease loyalty. Throw in easy credit terms and you can't afford to miss this sale. Stop the music and let's go over this one more time. PT Cruisers for $79 a month. Get out of your lease 8 months early for free, and everyone who comes through the door gets an employee discount, lease loyalty, and the Parkway difference. An extra $1,500 for your trade-in. The appraised value plus Parkway adds an extra $1,500. Save big money. Get to Parkway Chrysler Jeep now, because the end of the year is near. Parkway Chrysler Jeep on Gratiot at 16 and a half mile in Clinton Township, where you just show up, sign up, and ride.
Check your local paper for details.
Two new CDs are available now at DMRC stores.
Korn.
Korn's latest album titled Take a Look in the Mirror, featuring Right Now. The Offspring. The Offspring's new album, Splinter, featuring the single Hit That. Both CDs are in stores now on Sony Music Entertainment. Pick up the new Korn and Offspring releases at any of the following area stores.
Discs and tapes unlimited in Brighton.
Rockabilly's in Utica.
Switched On CDs in Novi.
Boogie Records in Toledo.
Rubber Soul in Ypsilanti.
The Rock Box in Southgate.
And Record Time in Ferndale and Roseville.
All stores are members of the Detroit Music Retailers Collective. Be independent. Shop independent. For more DMRC specials, check out Real Detroit Weekly.
Everyone knows that Tubby's has the best-tasting grilled submarines. But did you know that Tubby's actually has over 100 different varieties of hot and cold subs? Or did you know that you can order any of Tubby's all-white meat chicken, tender turkey breast, or delicious ham subs all off the low-fat menu? Let's not forget that Tubby's Grilled Submarines offers a full line of catering services, which includes party platters, cookie platters, fresh-from-the-garden specialty salads, and, of course, Michigan's famous party subs. Tubby's can cater all your needs. But of course you know that, because you've been making Tubby's Grilled Submarines Detroit's favorite sub shop since 1968. Come on into any one of Tubby's 95 Metro Detroit locations and enjoy any of their mouth-watering subs. While you're there, drop off any unopened new toy for Toys for Tots and receive 10% off your order at participating Tubby's locations. Thanks, Detroit, for making Tubby's Grilled Submarines Detroit's favorite sandwich shop.
Ooh, I love those Tubby's.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. A lot of the material that we discuss on the Peter Werby Show has to do with the nature of this society and how decisions are made. Are they made in a democratic manner, or are they made in an elite manner, far from us, you know, the common rabble? And there's always been, particularly for the last 20 or 30 years, when people have been doing research on secret societies, societies generally of wealthy and powerful men that critics feel are making the decisions that should be made in the democratic arena, but rather are being made behind closed doors, in retreats and getaways. And a real interesting book came my way. It's called Secrets of the Tomb, Skull and Bones, the Ivy League and the Hidden Paths of Power. The author is Alexandra Robbins, and I think that Skull and Bones, that society at Yale, has come to the fore quite a bit lately because George Bush Sr. and Jr. are both members. So let's welcome Alexandra Robbins. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for
for having me, Peter.
Now, you're a Yale alumna, and you've done, you know, you're on the staff of the New Yorker, and you're the co-author of the best-selling book, Quarter Life Crisis, The Unique Challenges of Life in Your 20s. And it says here very obliquely, you're also a member of the university's secret societies. I mean, that to us here in the Midwest, that all sounds very, very exotic and esoteric. What? Tell me in general about secret societies, and is yours so secret that you can't tell us about it, or
oh,
what?
No, I'm happy to. In fact, I spill some of my personal experience in the book Secrets of the Tomb, and I'll be happy to talk to you about it here. But to step back a bit and address secret societies generally, I think it's interesting that there are secret societies in America that wield an enormous amount of power, and I think Skull and Bones is the most powerful secret society here. Your listeners should know that I'm not coming at this from a conspiracy theorist standpoint. I'm a mainstream journalist. I chose to tackle this subject as just a standard investigative journalism work. And what I found is that while Skull and Bones and other secret societies may not be as omniscient, let's say, as some conspiracy theorists would have us believe, many of the conspiracy theories are, in fact, based on nuggets of truth. Now, Skull and Bones is based at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
It's headquartered in a building called the Tomb. It's included among its members presidents, including the Bushes, as you say, and Taft. It's included Supreme Court chief justices, CIA officials, cabinet members, congressmen, and senators. And one thing that makes the power of this society so staggering is that it is a tiny little club. Only 15 members are inducted each year at Yale. There are only about 800 living members at any one time, and yet two of them are facing off for the presidency right now. We have George W. Bush and John Kerry. And just the fact that two members of this tiny, tiny club could now be facing off for the position of leader of the free world, it's pretty astonishing.
Sure. Well, does it have an ideological character? Because here you have someone, a very, very liberal senator, John Kerry, and a very, very, very conservative president. It seems like they're coming from opposite ends of the spectrum.
Skull and Bones does not dictate a particular political policy. Basically, the agenda of this society, and this is what differentiates it from many of the other secret societies at Yale, including the one I was in, which is called Scroll and Key. Skull and Bones' agenda is basically to promote members to positions of power and then to have those members hire other members into positions of power. And this is something that we've even seen President George W. Bush do since he attained office. First of all, as I trace in the book, he got there partly through his Skull and Bones connections. And once he was there, he didn't hesitate to reward members of this secret club. There's Bill Donaldson, whom Bush appointed to head the Securities and Exchange Commission. He's a Bonesman. The Assistant Attorney General of the largest litigation component in the Justice Department. He's a Bonesman. Bush has appointed Bonesman ambassadors. The General Counsel of the Office of Homeland Security. The Secretary of Defense's representative to Europe and NATO advisor are Bonesman. And Bonesman Frederick Smith, who is the CEO of Federal Express, was reportedly Bush's top choice for Secretary of Defense until Mr. Smith had to withdraw for health reasons.
Now, you could actually look at it two different ways. Tell me in Secrets of the Tomb, Alexander Robbins, if you come at it either way. One, this is what you just laid out. Here's proof of the conspiracy that there's this elite group that reproduces itself through these long-standing connections. Or, on the opposite end, so what? Here was a guy that was in college with these people, and they like him, are well-connected, prominent, probably, you know, qualified for the position. So, yeah, I suspect you're going to say the truth lies somewhere in between.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
First of all, we don't know if these men were eminently qualified for the positions. For example, this is something that George H.W. Bush did as well when he was president. He appointed just scads of Bonesmen to prestigious positions. One of them, for example, he appointed as an ambassador who had absolutely no diplomatic experience. And again, across the board in his administration, you can find Bonesmen, ambassadors, assistant of Secretary of Labor, speechwriters, Department of the Interior, director in the Office of Management and Budget, an official representing him on State Department trips. Even Barbara Bush's chief of staff was the wife of a Bonesman. I think that's pretty weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is this disturbing? That's a fair question. I think one reason it's disturbing is that a lot of people across America, at least those who have read my book and then spoken to me or emailed me, have said that this is not right, that members of a secret society from this tiny little pool in New England do not represent the rest of America and should not be elected to government office. Another reason is that once you get people in this secret club into positions of power in America and they're still unwilling to divulge the particulars of their membership in a secret society, it seems like they're placing the priority of the society above the rest of the country.
Well, maybe this is something we ought to look at. So membership in there is secret and one does not divulge it? I mean, if you ask George W. Bush or any of the other people that you mentioned, are you a member of Skull and Bones? What did they say?
I should step back a second and explain that there's sort of a paradox in these clubs. On one hand, they want secrecy, and they demand invisibility as to their actions. On the other hand, these are the most elite clubs in America, so they kind of want to flaunt that they're members of them. For instance, this is encapsulated in George W. Bush's autobiography, in which George W. Bush says something like, my senior year at Yale, I joined Skull and Bones, a secret society. So secret, I can't say anything more. Kind of like he stamps it on his resume and then tells us that we're not privileged enough to know what goes on inside.
Now, Alexandra Robbins, you indicate that you are a member of a secret society, told us the name, and usually one thinks of these as reserved for powerful white men. And is this restricted to males?
Skull and Bones? I hope not, because that might say something about me.
No. Skull and Bones. Skull and Bones.
Okay. Skull and Bones turned co-ed in 1991. For about 20 years, there was a battle to get women into Skull and Bones. And the way they finally got in was scandalous. The Bones seniors, these are the seniors at Yale who are members of Skull and Bones, in 91 intended to tap women. But the alumni in the society heard about the plan, changed the locks of the tomb, which is their headquarters, and threatened to shut down the society. Yeah. When the seniors threatened a lawsuit, Bones held a vote that narrowly endorsed admitting women. But the day before initiation, a group of Bonesmen, who were led by the noted conservative William F. Buckley, obtained a court order blocking initiation. And this group claimed that admitting women into the tomb would lead to, and now I'm quoting, date rape in the medium-term future.
Well, what does that say for the Bonesmen? Maybe that's why they call them Bonesmen. Never mind. Let's not go there.
Eventually,
that was
my
fault.
Second vote and women were allowed in.
All right. The book is Secrets of the Tomb, Skull and Bones, the Ivy League, and the Hidden Paths of Power. My guest is Alexandra Robbins. She's the author, and it's published by Back Bay Books, an imprint of Little Brown and Company. Pardon me. Let's go back a little to what we were talking about. George W. Bush and Bush's father, both, as you indicated, tapped people for a lot of prestigious positions within the American government. Maybe we could compare, if you have this information, how did it look under Clinton for 8 years, and what was the last, and say, Carter before that? Was there an equal representation of Bonesmen in that?
No, definitely not.
So, okay. So this is...
Not so many Bonesmen. And a lot of people have asked me, well, Clinton went to Yale, why wasn't he a member of Bones? Clinton didn't go to Yale as an undergraduate. You have to be an undergraduate student at Yale to be tapped into Skull and Bones. In fact, Dick Cheney, went to Yale, but he dropped out after his sophomore year, so he wasn't eligible. You have to be in your junior year to get tapped. However, I did find that there are a family of Cheneys in Skull and Bones, and when I spoke to one, he said that they're distantly related. There's another one. Senator Joe Lieberman as well is another member of a Yale Secret Society.
Okay, well, you answered one of my questions I was just about to ask. One usually thinks of these, or frequently, as white Anglo-Saxon Protestant deals. So Jews apparently can get in if Lieberman's in. How about African-Americans?
Yeah, now the demographics are pretty broad. In fact, students have started to complain that there are token taps for the most minute details of ethnic backgrounds. But Skull and Bones especially does have a history of misogyny, of members who are anti-Semitic, of members who are racist. That is not an institutional creed that that stands now, though.
This is not unusual, though, for those old line, old boys club of powerful men. I mean, that's who they generally tended to be, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant men.
Right.
And they were usually pretty keen to keep that up. We still see, you know, like the... what was it, the Masters down in Augusta? You know, there's some of these remnants have been dragged, unfortunately, into the 21st century. But it looks like Skull and Bones, at least, has caught the news that you know, the times they are changing. One of the things I remember reading about another semi-secret organization. Now it's out of my mind. Is it the Bohemian Club? Is that it out in San Francisco?
Bohemian Grove.
Bohemian Grove, right? And where all these rich white guys do totally goofy stuff, initiations and weird plays and stuff like that. And I know in your book you talk about a little bit of the initiation process, and it's kind of like a fraternity. You know, kind of the stunts they pull. Maybe you could describe some of that.
Sure. Well. Yeah, there is some membership overlap, I believe, with Bohemian Grove and with some of the other secret societies, with the Trilateral Commission, for example, with the Freemasons, with the, who else is it, the Council on Foreign Relations. There is membership overlap. However, and I just want to address this because people ask me this a lot, Skull and Bones doesn't operate in sync with any other organization. There is no like regular meeting between Bohemian Grove and Skull and Bones. Anyway, Skull and Bones does have weird initiation rituals, and they do strange things throughout the year, too. The initiation, I got a copy of the script, so I go into the whole thing at length in the book. But I guess I could say here that the members of the club are costumed. There's somebody costumed as a devil, a Don Quixote. There's someone dressed as a pope, and the pope has 1 foot sheathed in a monogrammed white slipper that rests on a stone skull, and the initiates are supposed to kiss it. They're supposed to drink blood from a skull, although the blood is usually probably something like Kool-Aid. And the initiation ends with someone dressed as Don Quixote tapping the junior on the left shoulder with a sword, and he says, "By order of our order, I dub thee Knight of Eulogia." And Eulogia gets into the whole background of Skull and Bones. That's basically the goddess whom they worship, I guess.
Now, this is all kind of goofy, and
very
I mean, maybe, well, you would think that the entrance of women into these societies would kind of mitigate some of that. I don't know what it is with rich guys when they get together. I've you know, read a lot of other initiation rituals of, you know, secret societies and fraternities, and you go, whew, why don't they just say welcome? Let's drink a toast. But whatever. Alexandra Robbins, you said that you're not a conspiracy theorist, but I suspect there's at least some listeners. As soon as you listed off the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bohemian Grove, I think there was one more as well, and Skull and Bones, I mean, that just to many people shouts conspiracy in the sense, what I introduced the program with, is that these are decisions that are made far away, that affect all of us, that are made far away from the people that are going to be affected by them, and you would think normally would be involved in a democratic process. So you do have, you know, this locus of elite decision-making. Conspiracy, in other words, to circumvent the democratic process.
Sure, and again, the reason I usually state straight up front that I'm not a conspiracy theorist is because the conspiracy theorists already know about Skull and Bones, and they have their ideas of what the society does. It's the rest of America that's pretty clueless about this secret society, and that it really does have some influence. So those are the ones I'm really trying to get to pay attention. I mentioned before that I was surprised that many of the conspiracy theories were based on nuggets of truth and sort of blurred and hazy lines. And I'll give you an example of that. I had heard that Skull and Bones dropped the atomic bomb. Didn't really believe it, but I thought I should look into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that during World War II, the War Department was dominated by bonesmen. Henry Stimson was a bonesman, and he became FDR's Secretary of War in 1940. FDR, by the way, was a member of a secret society at Harvard. Henry Stimson hired 3 bonesmen, and one of them he put in charge of the atomic bomb, and the others were in charge of overseeing the construction and the deployment of the bomb. So did Skull and Bones plot from within the bowels of its tomb at Yale to drop the atomic bomb? Well, probably not. Did members of Skull and Bones band together and ultimately make this decision, as you say, far away from the rest of the American people to drop the bomb? Well, yes, they did.
Well, yeah, I'm actually trying, I guess I'm going to have, like, hopefully a lot of listeners will read the book, Secrets of the Tomb, you know, to make up my mind on all of this. Because when you have, you know, a category of people within a society, within a democratic society that has disproportionate power, the way, you know, the wealthy and the well-connected do, well, they're going to have lots of different things, including their little elite society. So, do you have a problem with the secret with the Skull and Bones existence in similar clubs like this?
actually do have a problem with skull and bones. And one of the reasons is that this society exists for the express purpose of basically its own superiority complex. It wants to raise members of skull and bones above the rest of the country. Everybody else they call barbarians, by the way.
Really?
There are
okay.
members of Skull and Bones, and anyone who's not a bonesman they call barbarians.
All right, that settled it for me. But go ahead. go ahead.
This is a group also that they do not contribute to the community as my society did. They do not contribute to the school. All they do is invest anything they get, and they do have millions of dollars in endowment to themselves. They also do some weird things. They condone stealing. There are many rumored items that are in the tomb, including Geronimo's skull, which currently has Native Americans up in arms and planning to protest, I believe, in New Haven.
Wait a minute.
How
did they get Geronimo's skull?
Well, according to a Skull and Bones document that looks pretty authentic to me, George W. Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, was stationed at the Army base at Fort Sill, Oklahoma in, I believe it was 1917, and that's where Geronimo's skull was. And according to this document, he and several other bonesmen sort of snuck out to the grave in the middle of the night, dug up the skull and some personal items, took it back to their room, cleaned the skull with carbolic acid, and shipped it back to the tomb. Now, there is a skull in the tomb right now in a glass display case, I was told, that members of Skull and Bones still call Geronimo.
Hmm. Now, a couple of times in discussing your book, Secrets of the Tomb, you say you've been told. Now, of course, when you're dealing with a secret society, you have to deal with what we call in the business informants. When you went about investigating the interiors of Skull and Bones, who were you able to talk to in information like this? I don't want you to reveal any sources. I know you wouldn't.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, go ahead.
With more than 100 members of Skull and Bones.
Yeah.
I knew which ones to call. I knew which ones not to call. However, I was hung up on or harassed or threatened or screamed at by probably twice that number of bonesmen. I also came across a sheaf of documents that were authentic Skull and Bones documents, so I was able to use those to verify the information that the bonesmen are telling me. Now, the follow-up question is naturally, well, why did they talk to you?
Right.
The reason is I was in Squirrel and Key, and I told every single one of them that, and they don't know that Squirrel and Key is unlike Skull and Bones. There was no power agenda. It was actually pretty boring. It was sort of a debate and essay club, and the only reason I stayed in that secret society my senior year was because they gave me free beer twice a week. That pretty much did it for me.
That'll keep me in there.
But once I told the Skull and Bonesmen that I was a member of Squirrel and Key, they assumed I was on their side. They assumed I could put their statements into context, and they were willing to talk to me.
Now, you said almost twice that number hung up on you, and give me just an example. I mean, were they offended that you even knew that they were a member?
Oh, no, they're never offended that you know they're a member. They like that. they're offended when you presume to know anything about them. After I wrote, this book began with an article, and after I wrote the article, I got a call at my office from another journalist whom I knew was a member of Skull and Bones. He scolded me for writing the article. He said, and I'm quoting, "Writing that article was not an ethical or honorable way to make a decent living in journalism," just because I wrote about his secret society. And then he asked me how much I'd been paid for the story. I refused to answer, and he hung up. Well, 15 minutes later, he called me back, and he goes, "I have just gotten off the phone with our people."
Wow.
I started laughing. I thought it was funny, so I said, "Your people?" And he said, "Yes, our people." He told me the society demanded to know where I got my information. He berated me for a while about how dishonorable I was for writing about Skull and Bones. And then he ended the conversation by saying, "There are a lot of us at newspapers and at political journalism institutions across the country. Good luck with your career." And
now,
he slammed down the phone.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You were talking about some very powerful men. If this was a movie, we had Robert Redford in it, there would be more at stake than your career, of course. But let me ask you that. Was there any time you ever felt physically intimidated or threatened?
I don't think so. I don't live in New Haven. If I lived in New Haven, I would probably move because there are too many of them over there, and then I might be looking over my shoulder. I don't feel and haven't felt physically threatened.
Mm-hmm.
I did actually hear that the journalist from Bones who called me has been actively trying to destroy my journalistic career. So he's trying to follow through on his threat, but I feel like I'm doing all right anyway.
Well, I was going to say, you have a good history. We're on the staff of the New Yorker, and you're co-author of the best-selling book, Quarter Life Crisis, The Unique Challenges of Life in Your 20s. But I suspect if I knew somebody was very powerful in the world of radio journalism, said good luck on your career, and slammed down the phone, that would make me a little nervous, huh?
Oh, it definitely shook me. And at that time, I was just a 23-year-old aspiring investigative reporter. So that did leave me shaken. But I've recovered.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, I want to congratulate you on your book. It's published by Back Bay Books. It's in paper. Secrets of the Tomb, Skull and Bones, the Ivy League, and the Hidden Paths of Power is the name of it. Alexandra Robbins is my guest. And got anything in the hopper? I mean, anything you're currently working on?
I do. And if anyone wants to be involved with that, they're welcome to email me at alexandrarobbins.com. I'm working on a book about sororities. That's my next one. That should come out in the spring. So anyone who might have any stories about sororities is welcome to call me. I'm also working on a sequel to Quarter Life Crisis, and there's more information about that on my website.
Third Life Crisis.
No. I'm not going there. This is going to be a more uplifting version of what happened in the 20s and 30s.
Okay. Once again, Secrets of the Tomb, Alexandra Robbins, published by Back Bay Books. Thanks a lot for having joined me.
Thanks very much for having me, Peter.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Fiber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff's on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
After reading an article claiming Philadelphia is becoming a more gay-friendly travel destination, we had to call the Harrises to see if they thought it was a great idea.
No, this should not be a gay-friendly travel destination by no chance.
Now, do you have a problem with homosexuals, or just you don't want that many of them in your city?
None at all.
What about two women playing with each other? Is that nasty?
Yeah,
really?
Really? Even if they're hot?
What are you, gay?
It's wrong.
Yeah.
What kind of good sight is that?
What if you had to have a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and the only person that could resuscitate you was gay? Would you not want that resuscitation performed?
Probably not.
Really? All right, let me ask you just one final question and we can put the subject to rest. If you could get a hand job from a man and for $1 million, would you do it?
Hell yeah.
You would? Boy, it took a lot, but by God.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's Riff.
101.01.
WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like LaFendi Restaurant, located on Haggerty Road in West Bloomfield and Evergreen Road in Lathrop Village. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit
at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. There's more Riff Rock coming right up, so don't go anywhere.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can.
So just listen to the news. We know that we're in an economic situation under the man sitting in the White House, George W. Bush, who's presided over a record number of job losses, that we've been in a recession almost since he took office. And yet, over the last few weeks, towards the end of 2003, we're told that the economy is rebounding, that jobs are starting to grow, that the stock market's almost up to that vaunted 10,000 mark. Again, whatever the hell that means, but it means that stocks are going well. I thought we would try to get a dispassionate look at all of this by inviting an author to join us on this show. His name is Vijay Prashad, and he's the Associate Professor and Director of International Studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. Vijay Prashad, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much. It's very rare for me to be told that I'll be dispassionate.
I know. I thought. Come on. They know that you know, this objectivity stuff is usually a mask for partisanship. And so, I'm not dispassionate at all. I'm very passionate about my beliefs, and I'm sure you are as well. The book is Keeping Up with the Dow Joneses. You've probably heard that old-fashioned phrase, "Keeping Up with the Joneses," means that we're just trying to keep up with our neighbors in terms of consumption. And it's published by South End Press. Southendpress.org is the website. When it comes to economics, most people's eyes just glaze over, and we just sort of look for the headlines. How are we doing looking at the headlines in mainstream media?
Oh, it's appalling. I mean, the first thing that the mainstream media does is they talk about something called the economy. You know, the economy is like the big elephant that sits in the room. Everybody talks about it. Nobody really knows what it is. Nobody has a handle on it. We're all, you know, seven, you know, visually impaired people trying to touch it and figure out, you know, is it a long tail? Is it a big trunk? When they talk about the economy, they talk about so-called macroeconomic, data. Like they like to talk about the fact that when they say the economy is growing, they mean that there's, more economic activity or more investments. They don't really mean the health of the average working person's, monthly paycheck. They are not interested in, the type of jobs that they're growing. When they say that we've grown 10,000 jobs, they don't care that the 10,000 jobs pay next to nothing or that they're mindless, mind-numbing jobs. So, when we read the mainstream press, their version of what is economics, I think it's quite correct to be bored by that because it has so little actual relevance. It's a kind of Alice in Wonderland thing, their version of economics says nothing about our lives. It masks the reality of, the recession, which is, I think, a very polite word to talk about the sinkhole in which most of us live.
Well, I actually received an email. In fact, people can always email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And someone said, why am I always complaining? He was just at a shopping mall, and everyone looked happy. People were doing what we were born to do. This is what he said. Shop? I thought we were born for greater purposes than that, but that's what he said. Things are going just swimmingly. The Bush tax cut is clicked in finally. We're getting out of the trough, but you don't see it like that.
No, I mean, yes, it's true. We can shop, and we have the capacity to shop, but that means we go into debt. The real secret of American consumer capitalism has been debt, has been things like the credit card, has been, the fact that we can take a second, third mortgage on a house. I mean, the truth is that we are only at liberty insofar as we are under the pressure of banks. When I sit up in the morning, I think I have student loans to pay off. I say that I have credit card debt. I say that I still owe 23 years on my house, etc. In other words, it's debt and further debt that allows me to go and buy things for Christmas or the holiday season or whatever euphemism we have for it. But the point is that debt is what then depresses me at the end of the month. It's what constantly puts pressure on me and reduces my choices when I say things like, look, I need to take a vacation. I don't have the money right now for a vacation. What I need to do is I need to put my debt down. Well, then I need to talk to those scandalous, agencies that will say, well, we'll buy your debt now, but, we'll only give you a loan at 23%. and I need to do that because I'm in desperate circumstances, etc. Or I go and join the military, you know. And, you know, you're a young student, you can't bear student loans, so you join the military and you get, you know, deferments on your loans. And then, you know, you might actually die, which is why we call it the poverty draft.
Hmm.
You know, that it's poor people who end up doing things like joining the military to get out of student loans. And so, you know, yes, it's true. You go to the mall, that's a very superficial way to read people's lives. You know, we are under pressure. That's the classic keeping up with the Joneses. We are under pressure to go and buy things. You know, we can't show up at our family functions without some gifts. We live in a society where we can't hand-make gifts. You know, it's not appreciated as much. So we go into debt. I mean, I joke with my friends and say that, you know, Santa doesn't live in the North Pole. Santa lives in China. And Santa is a big American corporation. The elves are Chinese, you know, and they are driving a kind of consumer ability so that then with very low wages I can go to Walmart, you know, which is an appalling travesty on our landscape. I can go to Walmart and for a little bit of money buy, you know, essentially garbage, but I'm in debt for that. So it's very superficial to say, look, people are buying, therefore they're happy. It's because we're allowed to go into debt that we can buy, and therefore we can live with some, you know, ability to say we're happier than people who can't go into debt. But debt is hardly liberty. You know, debt is the chain.
Well, let me make the devil's argument. Some of my listeners insist I do every time I speak. But, well, you are imposing a set of emotions, some might say, on, you know, on this vast number of people. That debt, you know, locked into debt, say, in the 19th century or the 18th century, had a much different character to it. Today we can, I mean, I was thinking, I'm debt-free because I never owe anything on my credit card. But then I think, wait a minute, I owe on my house, I owe on my car. So, yeah, I'm a debtor as well. But in some ways, it's simply the cost of living. In fact, some housing loans, as I'm sure you know now, they allow you to only pay on the interest. You don't even have to pay on the principal.
That's right.
So, and it is obviously the specter of the wealthy loaning money at high rates to the middle class and the working class. But as long as you're prudent, and I know that's a problem, you can get through your life with credit cards and housing debt and automobile debt just swimmingly.
Yeah, it's true that, you know, there's an advantage to debt, and the advantage is that you're able to buy more. The problem is the more you buy and the more we have advertising, et cetera, it creates desire, enormous desire. I mean, there's nothing wrong with desire. It's just that it's desire for corporate goods. You know, we have our culture, which is in this advanced stage of corporate decay, our culture has made it impossible for us to be happy with simpler things. You know, things that are made by hand, by family members, etc., not as appreciated as things that we have to buy in the shops. So at this time of the year particularly, you see this pressure to go and buy. Now, you're absolutely right that at one level, debt allows us to expand our choices. You know, that's very true, except that for most of the population, that is to say at least about 65% of the population, debt is an enormous burden. This is not necessarily me putting my emotions, you know, on the data. This is the survey literature that you can get from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You know, the United States government has an incredible, you know, wealth of data that government researchers produce every year. They go out and do surveys. People are burdened by debt, and that's what they have found. There is a General Accounting Office report on the state of people's understanding of the debt they carry. People are depressed by debt. Mm-hmm. And so, in other words, yeah, it's true, of course, I'm putting emotion into data. And I'm also, to some extent, saying that, you know, the fact that debt allows us to increase our choices, you know, so that I can buy a house, I'm minimizing that because I think that much more than just the ability to buy a house is how at the end of the month people feel incredibly burdened. See, it's lucky that you don't have student loans. But what's scandalous is that we live in a country where somebody at the age of 22 is negative $30,000 entering their lives, you know. I mean, if nothing else in our civilization, higher education should be, you know, subsidized or free. But no, we enforce debt on young people, and it makes their choices less. It makes them, in some senses, more small-c conservative, mm-hmm. because they're unable to take risks with their careers, you know. So they have to be on the straight and narrow. And in that sense, I think there's a real downer with debt.
Vijay Prashad is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. His book is Keeping Up with the Dow Joneses, Debt, Prison, and Workfare. We haven't even really gone into much of the... Well, we're talking about debt. Maybe we can get into the other subjects as well. I think probably most of the listeners, though, are concerned about the direction of the economy. They're very hopeful. And I mean, for one thing, there is a lot of generalized anxiety about, will I be able to keep my job? Many ways, that's what people are the most fearful about. And whereas we hear increasingly that jobs are now being created, anecdotally, everything I hear, I don't hear about anyone that I know of getting jobs. I've just found the most shocking loss of jobs among family members and people I know. What are we to make of this data that says things are getting better in terms of employment?
Well, it's a transfer of jobs. You know, on the one hand, high-paying, good jobs are disappearing, and more people have to now put up with terrible, appalling service jobs where, A, there's no scope for advancement, B, it doesn't require skills, which is a travesty for people, to stand there and be a greeter at Walmart, for instance, or, to be a so-called cook at McDonald's. You're not really cooking there, you're just putting together, pre-done food. So there's no skills, there's no advancement, and the wages are falling. So there is an incredible expansion of mindless jobs. There's no doubt about that. And, my friends and I often joke, people say that, they've made 10,000 more jobs last month. Well, at least three of them were mine, because more and more people have to take one or two jobs to survive. In some cases, there is even a third job on the weekends, delivering newspapers. You may remember a time when, young teenagers delivered newspapers. Now you have elderly people delivering newspapers.
That's right.
Jobs that were done by children. Increasingly in the summers, the so-called summer jobs for young people are disappearing. In cities and other places, the government used to subsidize summer job schemes for kids out of high school. That's disappearing because now older people are doing those jobs. So what's happening is it's a kind of degradation of jobs itself.
Now, why is this all happening? We, the American people, always brag and, that we're stick out our chest and we say we're the richest country in America. I mean, this is increasingly, and you've used the adjective appalling, and I think reasonably so, several times. Why do we have these appalling circumstances in such a wealthy nation?
Well, the simple point is that there are, places around the world where there are workers who will work for less. And American companies are moving their shops there. They are taking advantage of very low wages there and selling goods here. Now, it's important to remember that at the same time as American firms are in China, Mexico, etc., the politicians and the media are treating it as if Mexico and China are somehow capturing American jobs. We forget that there are American firms in China that are operating subcontracts or actually their own factories and producing goods there and then importing it into the U.S. In other words, these are American boss. So America continues to be a rich country. See, again, that's that kind of way in which they talk about economics. In other words, American big cat, fat cats are making lots of money on cheap labor overseas, selling those goods here and elsewhere. So America remains a very rich country. That's because of the highly unequal structure in our society. The very rich who own companies, who own toy factories and things in China, those very rich people are making an enormous amount of money. Most of it is invested here. They buy real estate, they buy stocks, etc. And their goods are being made overseas and being brought back and sold here. In other words, the jobs are being exported off. It's very correct. But I would hasten to have people recognize that there should be no anti-Chinese or anti-Mexican sentiment in this. It's not China and Mexico that are selling us goods. It's American firms that are taking advantage of these, agreements to go overseas and set up companies.
I think that's a very important distinction. Often I say, when people will call talk shows that I do, and they say we're giving all this money to Iraq. Well, we're not actually. I mean, some of it is, but most of it is going the same thing. It was American corporations that gave the government the wherewithal to destroy Iraq, and now we're paying other corporations to rebuild the damage that the other companies provided the wherewithal to carry out.
Yes, exactly. I mean, this is a classic instance of corporate welfare.
Yeah. And I actually, you don't hear people talking very much about welfare. That used to be one of the banes of talk radio. Oh, those welfare mothers, they're taking up public funds. And yet that seems to have disappeared as an issue. And corporate welfare, and maybe you could even expand a little on exactly what that is, and if you know some figures, the scope of it, how corporate welfare figures into the economy, and how you and I, the average taxpayer, are funding it.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's extraordinary. I get most of my figures, interestingly enough, from the Libertarian Cato Institute, which studies this, quite. Regularly, they showed about 4 or 5 years ago that, and this is a very, very conservative number, they showed that $75 billion of American taxpayers goes towards corporate welfare. I think this is an extremely low number. One federal agency, the Export-Import Bank, it's a U.S. government agency, one federal agency, in the last waning years of 1990s, I think it's 1999, gave $100 billion in trade assistance to global corporations. One federal agency, Export-Import Bank. And, you know, the list of companies is familiar for anybody. Boeing, Halliburton, Northrop Grumman, etc., you know, Chevron. $100 billion, one federal agency. You know, it's extraordinary. And this was money given to firms so that they can relocate overseas.
That's
so
amazing.
It's not just corporate welfare. It's transferring jobs away from American workers, paid for by the U.S. taxpayer.
Well, one common response to all of this is in desperation, particularly from people I talk to in the industrial sectors. They're going to say the big firms, the big corporations, the multinationals are going to impoverish us because there's going to be, if they reduce the wages of everyone, if it is a race to the bottom in every regard, and in this case wages, there's not going to be anybody around to purchase the goods or services. If you're going to have an impoverished nation that 2/3 of the people are just at a subsistence level.
This is where the first part of our discussion becomes important again. The fact that we have all these instruments of debt makes us, and plus we have this sense that we're Americans, so therefore, we must be able to buy. We continue to buy things. I'll tell you what's extraordinary, and this is a scandal. The, AFL-CIO has a credit card for its members. You know, you can, just like people can sign up for a credit card, say, with an airline company, etc. Have a credit card for their members. Most of the credit card, I was talking to an official in the AFL-CIO, most of the union members, expenditures of the credit card take place at Walmart, which is the biggest, union-busting firm. So why is this happening? Well, because, you need to buy stuff.
Yeah.
It's the only place that sells stuff that, the ordinary person can afford. You know, I need to buy shower curtains. I can't afford to go to, a store which sells it for $20, I can buy it for $5.99 at Walmart.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that at the back of my car I have a big sticker that says Walmart, low wages always. That's the contradiction with which we live. So, yes, it's a race to the bottom. We don't have money in our pockets. This is Henry Ford's understanding. If you don't pay your workers, they can't buy your cars. But the fact is we have credit cards. We have debt. That is the way in which we're disciplined into subservience. The fact that we are able to go and buy things, then we can say, look, things are going fine, I can buy a house.
Well,
but that is what makes us disciplined.
Well, how about the idea also is that prices have gone up so extraordinarily over the last generation? And I was talking to somebody the other day about they had bought a Corvette, and I said, what do they cost now, about $30,000? They laughed at me. He said, $30,000? They cost like $50,000.
Exactly.
And so I wonder if the system can reproduce itself well enough just with a highly waged 1/3 of the population.
Well, I mean, this is a good question, and this is a long-term crisis, I think, that the system will have to do, renegotiate, deal with, etc. But, these long-term problems are for a generation. The great economist John Maynard Keynes said, in the long run, we'll all be dead. My interest is, yes, I agree with you, in the long term, the race to the bottom creates a very significant problem for the system, you know, for industrialism, for capitalism, etc. But in the short term, it produces a great deal of grief for people. And I think that's why I was interested in these three forms. You know, given that there are such terrible times for millions of Americans, you know, the 6 million thrown off welfare, the 6 million who are caught in the vortex of the prison industrial complex, you know, there are 6 million Americans who work at such low levels, you know, wage work, etc. These millions of Americans, what I was interested in is why aren't people, you know, all in arms, on the street, rebelling? Why aren't they voting in large numbers for people like, say, Matt Gonzalez of the Green Party in San Francisco? And the thing I was interested in is these three ways in which we're disciplined, through debt, through prison, and through workfare. You know, why are we held down? Why aren't we all angry? Well, because our everyday lives are absorbed by these ways in which power keeps us down. And it's not just always the police, you understand. It's sometimes the fact that I have to sit at night and go through my bills and out of dignity desperately try to make my checkbook fine. Or I'm worried about going and working in workfare where there's no child care. What will I do with my kids? These worries, these anxieties make it impossible for us to have a general, you know, kind of rebellion against the system.
Vijay Prashad is my guest, and his book is called Keeping Up with the Dow Joneses, Debt, Prison, and Workfare. Debt, prison, and workfare certainly are the structural manner in which any revolt against this unnecessary state of affairs is continued. But what about sort of the mass psychology? I mean, I've seen these studies where that something like 20% of the population thinks their income is in the top 1%, so you know the self-delusion is astounding, and I forgot there's another figure which enormous numbers of people, 30-40%, think they will one day be in the 1%, and it's like some poor kid dreaming he's going to be a basketball star. In fact, a poor kid probably has a better chance.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, I mean, there are two different kinds of people. The first is those who believe that someday I'm going to make it. You know, I mean, I think that that's a tragedy, but also it's a beautiful tragedy. You know, people are saying that I want to be better than my situation, and you know, one cannot mock that too quickly. That people want to feel like that. You know, why would you want to live and be satisfied with the misery in which you live in? So that's one set. The other set is most interesting. Those who believe they are already doing well. You know,
yeah.
That's a genuine self-delusion.
Yeah.
You know, the one who says, I want to do well, at least we can say, look, they have ambition, they have hope for themselves, whatever. You know, whether the probability is low or not, at least they are still within the realm of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Those who say, I'm already, you know, within the top 1%, are living in a world somewhat of delusion, maybe. You know, it's hard for me to give you an analysis of why that is so, or how that has come to be. You know, some of it, I think, has to be understood in terms of race as well. You know, I mean, there's an understanding, you know, particularly when there's a race to the bottom, when people's wages are being depressed, when their liberty and sense of who they are is being suppressed a little bit. You know, in these times, racial anxieties are very high. And, you know, you get a sense from the white middle class that at least, if nothing else, you know, I can't be in the same position as those other people, you know, across the track. And, you know, you hear that and read that in very different ways. You know, one of the ways in which I've encountered that is the way in which certain communities talk about things like charter schools or removing their children from public schools, you know, giving them, you know, we need to live in a different way. We need gated communities. So that even middle-class neighborhoods become gated communities. You know, who are you gating yourself, you know, against? Well, maybe it's not about crime. Maybe it's just about how I see myself. If I'm in a gated community, then I must be in the top 1%.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen rather humble neighborhoods putting up a fancy sign, you know, and a brick wall, which has, you know, some, you know, very kind of Tony name outside, you know, Sherman Oaks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very humble neighborhood. It's a way of saying I'm better than everybody else, even though within that, you know, you're being ripped apart economically. So there is a way in which that self-delusion, you might say, comes, you know, along the grain of American history where people have felt, I'm better than somebody else. And frequently in the United States, that comes with all kinds of racial anxieties and logics. You know?
Well, I was going to say, and often is most pronounced in during periods of economic and social anxiety. Now, towards the beginning of our conversation, you were talking about how that people aren't satisfied any longer with like handmade items, and that everybody. Well, I remember there's a Monty Python movie where they were saying, "I want the machine that goes beep." Well, everybody wants the machine that goes beep. I mean, kids don't want a wooden toy; they want some very expensive computer toy. If in fact the economy is being sustained or even going up a bit on debt, if everyone took on the attitude that actually I have and that you're advocating, I mean, I don't want any machines that go beep. I've got enough of them around me to satisfy me. What happens to the economy then? I mean, it's a house of cards to some extent. Would the lack of people's willingness to take on debt signal a crisis? I mean, I think it would.
Well, you know, it depends on what one talks about, how one understands the economy. In my community, and it's a small town in Massachusetts, we have a Walmart. And, you know, let's say I refuse this holiday season to buy any of the garbage at Walmart. Instead, I make things for my family, you know, and we knit, we do other things, we make some toys. We're happy with that, and we don't spend $40 or $50 or $100 at Walmart. Instead, I take 25 of that $100 and go to a local store, you know, where things are made locally, and I buy things there. You know, or I buy fair trade goods. So I spend, for what I'm buying, I spend more than I would if I bought the same kind of thing at Walmart. But I spend less overall. You know, instead of spending $100 at Walmart for 20 pieces of junk, I spend $25 for one piece from another store. I've kept a certain kind of economy going. You understand? I've kept a fair trade economy alive. I've also changed the needs of my household, and I've refused to participate in the race to the bottom economy. You know, in other words, we need to think about supporting the economies that we like and rejecting the economies that are oppressing us.
Well, let me give this quote as we close. Francis Fox Piven has said, Vijay Prashad draws a compelling bottom-up picture of the American political economy today. We've barely scratched the surface. I would recommend this as important reading, Keeping Up with the Dow Joneses, Debt, Prison, and Workfare. It is published by South End Press. You can go to southendpress.org, and you can order it right there or at your local independent bookstore. Vijay Prashad, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Please, it's my pleasure. You can always use your public library.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Hello?
Hey, Bob, what are you doing, man?
No, I'm just leaving work. Why, what's up?
You should shoot across the border and meet me at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor. Dude, they have incredible girls from all over the world, and I'm telling you, these girls are hot.
Oh, man, I gotta go across the border. I don't know.
Come on, you big baby. It's just 5 minutes from the Bridger Tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. And get this, at Leopard's Lounge, you don't even have to pay a cover charge, ever. Plus, they even have free parking. You gotta meet me there. They have these two girls from Romania. Bro, I'm telling you, they're the friendliest girls I've ever met. Heck, all the girls at Leopard's Lounge are friendly.
Wait a minute, did you say no cover, free parking, and women from all over the world?
Bro, that's what I've been telling you. So, are you going to meet me up at Leopard's Lounge or what?
Dude, I'm so there. I'll see you in about half an hour. And hey, if you get there before me, tell the girls I'm on my way.
You got it. I'll see you at Leopard's Lounge.
Leopard's Lounge in Royal, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Royal.
Good morning. This is Ray Vinson of American Equity Mortgage. If you're hearing our message at this time, it's probably because you're at work, driving around, or can't sleep. If you can't sleep, I hope it's not because of money problems, but if it is a money problem, American Equity Mortgage can help. You're not alone. The average household has a credit card debt of $6,000 or more and paying a fortune in interest. You see, if you're a homeowner, you can use the equity in your home to consolidate all your bills and have only one payment. Think about that, just one new low monthly payment. Your equity can be used to pay off your auto loans, credit cards, and get a new low fixed rate on your mortgage. You will be saving hundreds of dollars each month. American Equity Mortgage specializes in homeowners with less than perfect credit. We have helped thousands of people just like you get back on track. You can call our office right now, and a loan specialist will call you first thing in the morning. That's American Equity Mortgage. Call toll-free 888-71-LOAN-1, 888-71-LOAN, then the number 1.
You're rocking on the Riff with Rick Fox.
There's more unstoppable Riff Rock coming up next.
Have you ever had a bad experience at the dentist? A lot of people are afraid of the dentist. Others just don't have the time. Then when they finally do go, there's a lot of work to be done, and it makes them even more afraid or embarrassed. Hi, I'm Dr. Abe Krishanovitz. With Sedation Dentistry, we can make it easier for you to have years' worth of damage repaired in just a few visits. It is simple, and regardless of how many years of neglect you've been through because of fear or lack of time, we will help you achieve healthy teeth and gums for a lifetime. You've put off going to the dentist long enough. Don't wait any longer. What I'd like you to do right now is call 586-247-0010. That's 586-247-0010. Or visit us on the web at mydentistry.com. We've changed people's lives. We can do the same for you. No matter how long you've waited because of fear or lack of time, we will help you. You thought about doing it. This is your opportunity. Call now, 586-247-0010, and receive your initial exam and x-rays for only $19.
Are you ready? Drew and Mike in the morning.
Hit me with some funny
shit.
Unstoppable rock.
Unstoppable rock.
All day long. 101 WRIF. Detroit's the Riff.
Send away for a priceless gift. One not subtle, one not on the list. Send away for a perfect world. One not simply so absurd. In these times of doing what you're told.